जयं विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान अभयचरणारविंद भक्तवेदांत गोस्वामी महर्षिशील प्रभुपाद की जयं नितिलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान भक्त सिद्धांत सरस्वती महर्षिशील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्रीहरदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोगोविनाथ श्यामगुंड राधागुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायापुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की समवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंद All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhudale Shivani Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Prajarine Narvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Desha Dharini. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाघया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुधापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सह नरगुणाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं चैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमो ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनि नामिनि नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणि निर्विशेषशून्यवादी त्यादेशधारिणि नमो ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तसिद्धान्त सरस्वती नामिने श्रीवर्षभानुदेवि दैदायाः कृपाब्धये कृष्णसम्बन्धविज्ञानं दायिने प्रभवे नमः माधुर्योज्ज्वलप्रेमाद्यं श्रीरूपानुगमभक्तिदा श्रीगौरकरुणाशक्ति विग्रहाय नमोऽस्तु ते नमस्ते गौरवाणि श्रीमूर्तये दीनधारिणे रूपनूतविरुद्धाभसिद्धान्तध्वन्द्वहारिणे नमो गौरकिशोराय साक्षाद् वैराग्यमूर्तये विप्रलम्बरसाम्बोधे पदाम्बुजाय ते नमः नमो भक्तिविनोदाय सच्चिदानन्दनामिने गौरशक्तिस्वरूपाय रूपानूगवराय ते गौराविर्भवभूमिस्तुं निर्देष्टा स जनप्रियाः वैष्णवः सार्वभौम श्री जगन्नाथाय ते नमः वाञ्छकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमो महावदन्याय कृष्णप्रेमप्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यनाम्ने गौरद्विषये नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशास्त्रियं हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशगोपिकाकन्द राधाकन्द नमोऽस्तु ते सुरतौ पङ्गोर्मम मन्दमतेर्गति मत्सौवस्य पदाम्भोजौ राधामदनमोहनौ दिव्यवृन्दारण्यकल्पद्रुमादश्रीमन्द्रत्नागरसिंहासनस्थौ श्रीमद्राधा श्रीलगोविन्ददेवौ प्रेष्टादिभिः सेव्यमानौ स्मरामि श्रीमन् रासरसारम्भी वंशी वटतटस्थिता Karshan Venu Swaner Gopir Gopinatha Shri Estunaha Taptakanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sude Devi Pranamami Hari Priyem Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So, before we continue with Bhagavad Gita today, a couple of things just want to keep everybody informed. From now on, these chapters are very, very important in Bhagavad Gita. What we are discussing now, once the 11th chapter is over, then the 12th chapter is Bhakti Yogam. Bhakti Yogam, which is given as devotional service in the translation, isn't it? That chapter on itself is a very important chapter because we have so many conceptions about bhakti. What does bhakti mean? So, in order to remove those misconceptions from our mind, Krishna has given a very precise understanding of bhakti in that chapter, Bhakti Yoga. Once we absorb that chapter properly, a lot of misconceptions about bhakti will go from our own mind. Over a period of time, in the traditions, everything gets changed. We move away from the truth. We move in another direction according to our vasanas and our thoughts. We will develop something new. Some new science about, but because Krishna has spoken so precisely about bhakti in that chapter, it is a very important chapter, and we would like to take as much time as we need to go through that chapter, which means a lot of time we need to discuss every verse, word by word, in that chapter. As soon as we finish that chapter, from then onwards, from 13th to 18th, it is known in the Shastram as Jnana Shalkam. Shalkam means six chapters, which is related to knowledge, knowledge of the self. Krishna has, generally we say in Bhagavad Gita, Karma Shalkam, Bhakti Shalkam, Jnana Shalkam. Six chapters of Karma, six chapters related to Bhakti, and the last six refers to Jnana, knowledge. So, these last six chapters are particularly important, and it is also the most difficult chapters in the Bhagavad Gita to understand because of the background of the Upanishads in there. Complete Upanishads that Krishna has brought into those six chapters. Many of them are from Kathopanishads, Chandokyam, Bhradaranyam. Everywhere Krishna has pulled verses and brought the messages to us to present to us that understanding of Krishna consciousness from the Jnani's point of view. So they are important, and that will need a lot of time to go through each of those chapters. Each chapter requires long, long introductions, and every verse also requires very large explanations. But once we understand those six chapters, you will genuinely appreciate Bhagavad Gita's glory. Because normally we think we read Bhagavad Gita once, twice, thrice maybe. After that we think that we have understood Bhagavad Gita. We think like that. But practically, to tell you the truth, many, many great personalities who have performed upasana. Upasana means studying Bhagavad Gita most of their life. At some point in time, they started saying, now they have understood how much they have not understood Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a very, very interesting book in one sense. On the other side, it's also very, requires a lot of explanations and hearing and reflection. Shravana Mananam Nididhyasanam, that is the process. Hearing, reflection on that, and holding on to that concept, what is Krishna has spoken, to that very strongly,
and to bring that into our own life in this world. Otherwise, it is no benefit to anybody. So Krishna says there, so that is as far as the Bhagavad Gita is concerned, which means that we need more and more lot of time to explain things properly. Then, as we have planned before, from 24th of December, that is the Saturday, next Saturday I think, yeah, from next Saturday, for 9 days, finishing on the 1st of January 2012, we will continue from Bhagavatam where we stopped in July. We stopped somewhere around 13 chapters, something like that. We'll continue from that. And we may not cover all the pastimes seriously. I mean, we may not get that much time. But the idea is to talk about that Rasa dance, Krishna's Rasa dance. It is one of the most misunderstood chapters in the Bhagavatam. People, even in India also, you will see that they will talk about Rasa dance in a very loose way, as though Krishna was having a great time with the gopis or things like that. Because they have not studied Bhagavatam properly in the background of the great devotees and acharyas who have understood Srimad Bhagavatam properly, and therefore a lot of misunderstanding comes from there as well. To explain that better, as you know, gopis who have come to this world, they come from three different backgrounds. If you have read Bhagavatam, you will notice that. And one of them, they are the great sages who have associated with Lord Ramchandra during his pastimes. Those sages, if you remember, in Ramayanam you will see this, Ramachandra, while he had spent his 14 years in the forest, most of the time he spent in Salsangam with the sages. That was the main business. Not killing Ravana bringing back Sita Devi, these were not the main purpose. Ramachandra himself says, when he was given this instruction by Kaikeyi that he should go to forest, Ramchandra says, how fortunate I am. That was what his words were. Why? Because only in the forest he knew that he will be able to discuss spiritual life and spiritual topics with great souls who lived in the forest. You will see a number of people there, Bharadwaja Maharshi, Agastya Maharshi, Kannu Maharshi, and so on and so forth, a number of them. And Ramchandra, Sita Devi and Lakshmana going to each one of them and spending days together with them talking about transcendental topics, spiritual life. That is a serious discussion in the Ramayana. And that is the most important part of Ramayanam. And because of those discussions, Valmiki did not elaborate them enough. Therefore, Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote a separate book known as Adhyatma Ramayanam, the spiritual Ramayanam, which is taking out these discussions with Ramachandra and the sages in the forest. Just like Krishna has discussed with Uddhava and Arjuna, Ramachandra, they had come with only one purpose, to give the spiritual understanding of life to this world. That's their purpose of their appearance. Otherwise, killing Ravana or killing Kamsa or killing Shishupala, they don't have to come here. All the way sitting there, they can manage it to do those things. But in order to bring this understanding of spiritual consciousness, which means knowledge, which means realization, simply saying to someone that I am not this body is not enough. On a theoretical level, it's fine. But how does that get translated into our own consciousness? How does it change our understanding from this body? How do we move away from the body to the soul? That is why all these discussions have become necessary. Through those discussions, Ramachandra and Vasishtha Maharshi and Bharadwaja Maharshi and others, they enlighten people through Yoga Vasishtham, which requires 34,000 verses they wrote about spiritual life alone. In fact, 24,000 verses, Ramachandra's story is over. From Ayodhya, taking from birth onwards, finishing that battle with Ravana and coming back, all that is finished in 24,000 verses. But 32,000 verses Vasishtha Maharshi took to discuss with Ramachandra and the sages about spiritual life, serious spiritual topics. And that is 32,000 verses. Important part of the Ramayana. Those who are seriously absorbed in understanding Ramachandra, they'll go to that aspect of Ramachandra rather than the pastimes are important. They are not minimized at all. But when we do not take the instructions of Krishna and Ramachandra properly, then that spiritual message won't get in. There is a message in all this Vedic literature. It is not simply just storybooks. That's the way most of the people see that. So, we have got to discuss Yoga Vasishtam sometime. But coming back to this Srimad Bhagavatam, why is this Rasa Dance so important? Because, as I said, it was those sages who associated with Ramachandra in the forest. They were a group of gopis who came in the gopis form to associate with Krishna. It was the benediction Ramachandra has given to them that they will get an opportunity to enjoy with Krishna in the next appearance. Ramachandra has given this promise to them. So therefore, a group of those sages, they have come as gopis. They have come as gopis in the Krishna avataram, in Krishna's appearance. Then many others were from the heavenly planets, whom Krishna has invited personally. When did this invitation happen? When the milk ocean was churned, later on when there was a battle between the demigods and the demons, Mahabali lost that battle at the end. Vamanamurti came and took away everything from him and handed it over back to the demigods. So during that battle, Krishna was actually making the selection. Vamanamurti was making the selection who should come into the Krishna avataram, in Krishna's appearance, to associate with Krishna at that time. So decisions have been taken long ago before Krishna's appearance in this world. Who should accompany him during the battle? All that you can see in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these two groups, demigods and the demigoddesses who were invited from the heavenly planets to come, then the great sages who were given the promise by Ramachandra to come as gopis, and there is a third group who is much more important. They are the Upanishads. You will see they are called Shrutichari. Shrutichari means personified Vedas. Vedas personified means Upanishads personified. That is why when one devotee saw Krishna when Krishna gave information, Krishna gave the darshan to that devotee, what he saw? Avidam narada dehi vilasal Upanishal sundari mandalescha. They are called Upanishal sundari. Upanishal sundari means Upanishal beauties. Sundari means beauties. Upanishal sundaris they are called who have come as gopis. So when Upanishal sundaris, Upanishal beauties has come as gopis, we have got the sages there, and then the women from the goddesses, from the demigods, women from the heavenly planets, and now we have got the Upanishads personified from the Vedas. They have all come and they are the gopis. They are the gopis who have come to associate with Krishna. So naturally, when Upanishads personified comes here, Sukadeva Goswami, being an Upanishads person from his background, he would have a lot to say about it to us. Lot to say. And you will see that as and when he gets an opportunity, he puts forth that understanding of the Upanishads through Bhagavatam. Normally we won't take notice of these things. When we come to the words what Sukadeva Goswami has spoken from Upanishads, we tend to think, this we don't make any head and tail of, we just leave it. And we go to the verses straight away, isn't it? Where is the story part? No doubt the story part is important. But personality like Sukadeva Goswami, he would like us very much to understand what he had to say about these Upanishad beauties who had come. Because Upanishad's knowledge is what is in the Rasalila, in the Rasa dance. And when you read through that and you get an understanding of that, you will appreciate how deep this Rasa dance topic is. Naturally, you will feel a reverence towards that, and seeing the mood of the great devotees keeping that background of the Upanishads very much within, these sages have spoken there. And that is the message very clearly coming through Rasa dance. And it is an important topic. It's a very important topic in the Bhagavatam. So in order just to get a feeling for that, We'll have these classes from 24th of December to 1st of January, the same times like before, 7 to 11:30, and then prasadam, and then we rest during the afternoon, those who can't find time. So that's the idea.
Except
so
on a, Sunday we have to start half an hour early.
Ah, Sunday. That is on 25th, is it?
Two Sundays, yeah.
Ah, on both Sundays.
Yeah.
Okay. So Christmas Day, that is 25th, and on the 1st, New Year Day, both days we have to start at 6:30, isn't it? Yeah, 6:30. So it's a half an hour change. So that's the plan. And
can I say something?
Yes, please.
The 1st of December, 1st of January, why can't we have a, if it's possible, can I have our house
built? I think it will be difficult now because we have booked it.
Oh,
then
okay,
they won't like it if we cancel
yeah,
it now.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah. We may have to do it later another day. Let the weather gets better. That place is warm there, and good lighting as well. We'll keep it like that for the moment. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So there are so much important topics to discuss, and when you understand the Bhagavad Gita's these coming chapters. And Srimad Bhagavatam, what we have spoken about, plus we have other books also to discuss. Like in Stuti, I mentioned before, there are three things in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One, the story, Katha. Secondly, the Stuti, glorifications. And thirdly, Upadesham, instructions. It, one goes above the other. In other words, first when we begin with Bhagavatam, it is all Katha, story, isn't it? You read, understand the story, and you feel some connection with Bhagavatam. As you move further, you see individual devotees' relationship with Krishna. How they glorified Krishna is because it's only through them you can understand Krishna. Otherwise, it's not possible. Normally, what do we understand about Krishna? We understand nothing about Krishna, isn't it? What we understand about Krishna is got a flute in the hand, a bluish color, and a yellow garment, and he's having a... He lives somewhere in the cloud somewhere in Goloka Vrindavan, and we don't even know where it is. No idea practically. But when you go through the glorifications of the devotees, you will see how they connected themselves with Krishna. That is very important. Because we feel no connection with Krishna, isn't it? We just see Krishna sitting somewhere, we are here. What do we know about Krishna? We chant the holy name, we take prasadam, and we listen about Krishna. But still, through the glorifications only, you will see there how these great personalities, some of them were great kings, for example, Parikshit, Muchukunda, Yudhishthira Maharaj, Ambarish, they were all great, great kings, weren't they? They were kings. Then we have, the kings means opulent life, very lavish life, and full of authority and control. So that in spite of that, connection with Krishna. How did they do that? This is what one has to learn from them. In spite of all, we say we have responsibilities in this world. Think about a king, how much responsibility he has got. Constantly he has to watch about others being trying to attack the kingdom, or some form of they have to control over the administration. Funds, management, a lot of responsibility for them, for the kings. In spite of all that, Ambarish, Yudhishthira, Parikshit, and many others, Muchukunda, and so on and so forth. In Solar dynasty as well as the Lunar dynasty, you see them, how they managed to stay as devotees. How they took the message of self-realization so seriously in their life and perfected their life. This is the important part of this glorification. So there itself, each of those three, particularly for example, if you take Muchukunda's glorifications of Krishna, each and every verse, if you start going through it, you will notice that Muchukunda is speaking from a very higher level of understanding of spiritual life, not from an ordinary king. He's a very highly realized soul. And he is discussing with Krishna about his future. What should happen to me when I leave this world? And Krishna is telling to Muchukunda, this is what your situation is, act like this and release yourself. So Muchukunda has an interesting relationship with Krishna. in his glorifications you will notice that. Similarly with Bhishma, Kunti Devi and others also. So these glorifications are also an important aspect of Srimad Bhagavatam. After that, what comes in the Bhagavatam is the instructions there, where direct instruction, like Krishna has done to Uddhava, they are on the topmost level. On the topmost level. Why it's on the topmost level? Because it is difficult to experience that. Krishna is saying so many things there. We read all that and we discuss about that. But this thing called this mind, this body and intelligence and ego will not allow that thing to get inside. It blocks everything. Body blocks first. Then the mind blocks, intelligence blocks, and the senses and the false ego. Everything puts a stop to it. It won't allow you, what Krishna says, we are still thinking whether it is correct or not. These questions will come at that time. So many things, Krishna. So that means these instructions, we have to study a lot more deeper level to accept it inside. At least to get a realization of that. So in the Bhagavatam, as well as in the Bhagavad Gita, from the Vedic point of view, the sages have already confirmed certain things to us. A very primarily understanding of things as far as this body is concerned and as far as the mind is concerned. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, you will see there that in different ways Krishna is presenting to us about this creation and about us. Two things. In the seventh chapter, when we discuss Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talked about two things there. Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti. Isn't it? Aparaprakriti and Aparaprakriti. Very important chapter that is. Jnana Vijnana Yogam, it is titled. If we don't understand it, you should read it, hear it again and again. Because if you don't get a feel for it, remaining chapters will also get very difficult. The point is, Krishna is saying to Arjuna and to us, that the thing what you think you are not that. Isn't it? I'm thinking I'm this body, some people think I'm the body, some people think I'm the mind, some people think I'm the intelligence, and some people think I'm the ego, the ahankaram or jiva, it is referred to. Jiva is nothing but that false ego's manifestation is this jiva. So all of these things are in one way preventing us to get to know Atma, the soul inside. Except that we know everything, but that one thing what we are, we don't know. This is where the problem is. So in that Jnana Vijnana Yogam chapter, in the seventh chapter, Krishna said to us that there is two prakriti, one is paraprakriti and other one is aparaprakriti. Mind, intelligence, false ego and the five material elements, all of them together eight, is called aparaprakriti, the lower nature. And superior to that, Krishna says there is paraprakriti, which is the soul inside. The same principle, what is in that seventh chapter, Krishna brought to us in another form in the 13th chapter, in the form of Kshetram and Kshetrajna. Kshetram is that aparaprakriti and Kshetrajna is the paraprakriti. You will get clarity of this when you come to that chapter. I will go through that as much in depth as possible. And when you hear, you will see that why Krishna is explaining in a particular way. This thing, so that this gets firmly rooted inside. How will otherwise this concept of the body will go from inside? It's not possible. Till we accept truth is like this, by karmam it won't happen. This is a misunderstanding. Karmam cannot change our realizations. Realizations will change by hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The knowledge what Krishna has given to us, if you keep hearing that, one day it will hit us. We will find it difficult to reject it. At the moment we are rejecting everything. We are hearing and we are rejecting. Is it? Constantly hearing and constantly rejecting also. It's not sticking in. It looks to us something very upset and nothing clear why it's like this. We are, as soon as the class is over, we are still the body, we are still the mind, we are still the intelligent. So why that change is not happening? That is the question. There are various reasons for that, and that's what Krishna is going to talk about, that from the 13 to 18 chapters. There is this chapter of Shraddha, Shraddha Traiva. Shraddha doesn't mean giving attention. That is not Shraddha. We'll discuss that when you come to Shraddhatra Vibharam. Three modes of nature and how it affects us in our understanding things, how it changes ourselves in us. Without our knowledge, it changes us. Then there is Gunatraya Vibhagam. Gunatraya Vibhagam means the three modes of nature, how it operates within us. They are all working inside and we are not even conscious of that. And still we think, what we do is we try to understand everything with the mind and intelligence. And that exactly what Krishna doesn't want us to do through the mind and intelligence. Mind and intelligence cannot help in spiritual life because mind and intelligence has come from the soul. Therefore, they are not the truth is very simple, but the instrument with which you are trying to understand the truth is very complex because we use this mind. This is the problem. The instrument with which you are trying to understand the truth is very complex. That is this thing called mind and intelligence. The truth is very simple. Krishna is saying to us, Aham Brahmasmi. I have nothing to do with this body. I am different from the body, different from the mind. But somehow or the other, it's not clicking. It's always still back to the body again. So that is the problem. So in order that all these things to happen, Krishna is going to explain to us in those chapters how difficult it is when we have brought with us a big baggage behind us from previous lifetimes. We didn't come here empty-handed, did we? We didn't come here empty-handed. We have brought with us a huge baggage behind, and in that baggage there is all these vasanas stacked up one over the other in the form of prarabdham, agamam, sanjidam, three different kinds of karmam as well. Now, this prarabdha karmam, what is actually the main topic of discussion in the Bhagavadam? Only those who are studying Bhagavadam very seriously will notice these things. Prarabdha karmana rovanam nyabadal panjabhaudhigam. In the Bhagavadam, in the beginning itself, you will notice Narada Maharshi saying, Arabdha karmana rovanam nyabadal panjabhaudhigam. Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, Vedavyas, I had to wait. Even though I had the association of the great sages, even though they have spoken to me about Krishna, I could not continue my spiritual life. He went to the forest, he sat there in meditation, Krishna appeared. And Krishna appeared in front of Narada Maharshi and told him, Narada, in this life, you can't come back to me. You have to wait. You have to wait till this body drops down. Isn't it? You have to wait. Why he had to wait? What was the reason? He says there, Arabdha karma narvanam nyabadal panjabhaudhigaham. Arabdha karma narvanam. That means this prarabdham that has come with him has created that body. Do you know what body, the material body today, we understand in one way from the scientists and the doctors and all that. If you understand from Krishna, what Krishna says about this body, you will be completely in shock what Krishna has to say about it. Krishna says that this body is nothing but this prarabdha karmam. That means the karmam, karmavasana inside what we have, which is in our subtle body, that has manifested in the form of a gross body. That means when it becomes mature, say karmavasana inside, when it has become mature, something like, suppose we spat it out something, we spit something out, then you can't take it back, isn't it? That is this body, Krishna is saying this body is something which has already come out of the subtle body. Once it has come out of the subtle body, then you can't put it back again. That means it has taken its gross form, the most gross form it has taken. That is this gross body what we have got. This, maybe after research, scientists may find out one day that this is the truth. Because today, if you ask anyone, whether doctors or scientists, they also don't know a lot of things about this body. Nobody can explain this body. It's one of the most amazing phenomena in this world, this material body. everybody. Everyone's body is the same. We don't understand this body. Is it not? Do we understand this body? Can anyone say, I understand my body? I don't even know what's going on inside. It's going on, but I don't know what is going on inside. When it will stop, I don't know. And it will stop, I don't know. So therefore, Krishna's point is, having said that you are not this body, Krishna also mentioned that this body is not yours. Straight away he said, his body is also not yours. Why does he say like that? Reason is that you can ask this question yourself. Did you get a body because you have asked for that kind of body? No, you have no choice. That means somebody else made the decision for you what kind of body you should get. Number one. You never thought where you will take birth, under whose parents, who will be the parents. Nothing was decided. Who decided that? No idea who decided. Somebody making decision somewhere where we should take birth, what kind of body we should have, whether we should have black hair or blonde hair or brown hair, whatever that is, whether we should have white body, black body, brown body, whatever that is. None of them, we have no voice at all, no choice either to make that decision. Krishna is saying to us, all these decisions are made elsewhere. You are not this body and the body is not yours. Because no decision, we were not involved anywhere in making this decision of this particular body. We were not involved. One day we were put there and told, get on with it. That's all we have. We don't have any other idea about this body. So there is a lot of things related to body. Krishna talks about that in the Bhagavad Gita. And when we see through Krishna's point, you will notice that we have a lot of misunderstanding about this body. What we think normally, or everything, body is to be looked after, body is to be... Krishna is concerned, it is not worthwhile caring for the body a lot. Sometimes we say, oh, we are devotees, we have to look after the body for doing service. Actually, that is a primary understanding. It is not the perfect understanding of Shastram. What Krishna is saying here is that this body is something that has come out already. There's nothing you can do about it now. It has to go through its own karma, where you have no control over it. Where you have no control over this body. Material nature will decide how it will function in this world. And one day, material nature will decide, that's it. It can go. And then it's gone. You are not consulted at any point in any of these decisions. This is what a point I'm saying. When you were given birth, it was not decided. When we were in the womb of the mother, who arranged the food? The same material nature has arranged the food for you through the mother. And when you came out of the womb of the mother, who looked after? Who gave the love and affection for the mother to feel towards the child? Material nature did that. It is that karunyam, that mercy of the material nature that comes through the mother to look after the baby. Otherwise, if mother doesn't care, what will happen to the baby? What will happen to the child? So therefore, you can see that in every step in our progress in life, everywhere material nature makes the decision and not us. Foolishly, we think, oh, I went to the doctor, he gave me a good long prescription, and I've taken my bupa and all that. Also, all bogus. All this is nonsense. It's not going to help. Material nature makes all decisions, all times in our life. All times, they make the decision. Krishna's point is, do not care, give too much attention to this body. Body will be there till that prarabdham is finished. Prarabdham is over, this body will go. You cannot stop it from going away. Sometimes you can see that some famous doctors, somebody goes to, sometimes some patient goes to a very famous doctor and something happens and the patient dies. Sometimes some patient goes to an unknown doctor and he gets cured. Also, all these things happen in this world. It's not that everything the doctor decides and everything happens accordingly. He also knows that there's only certain things in his control. According to his studies and education, he does some things. But apart from that, there is an unknown material energy behind everything which controls this body at all steps. And at the time when one has to leave this body, that is also decision of material nature. Because of that, Krishna is saying to us, just like material nature gave you the body, material nature controls your body as well throughout your lifetime. and eventually she takes it back from you. And we have nothing to do with that. That is the point Krishna is making. So, because Prarabdham is so powerful, Prarabdham is so powerful, it has come out already. There's nothing we can do about this Prarabdham. Nothing we can do about this Prarabdham. Prarabdham, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, is never touched by anybody. Never touched by anybody. In fact, all the yoga system, whether it is Jnana Margam, Yoga Margam, or Bhakti Margam, this wiping out Prarabdham is the most difficult thing. Because why? Why is that? We find it difficult to take to spiritual life. It is what is stopping that is also Prarabdham. Sometimes people ask this question, they have this question to say that why everybody is not interested in spiritual life. Reason is this, Prarabdham is not allowing them. What can you do? Prarabdham is not allowing them. It's only when that Prarabdham gets a little bit relaxed, then you get this motivation to take to spiritual life. Otherwise, your Prarabdham won't allow you to come anywhere near to Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. It won't allow you to come to anywhere closer to Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the way it operates. So, if you look into Bhagavatam, you will see this. This is a big topic. It will take a long, long time to talk about this. Lot of devotees trying to get rid of this Prarabdham from inside. How do they do that? In different processes, different ways they do it. For example, if karma vasana, that means our propensity to act. Suppose someone has a lot of rajogunam inside, which means that he has a lot of karma vasana inside. That's what it means. So therefore, Krishna brought this situation that he said, you engage in karmam, like he told Arjuna. What did he tell Arjuna? Arjuna, don't give up fighting. Why? He saw through Arjuna so deeply, he could see that in every cell of Arjuna, there is this fighting spirit in him. And you tell Arjuna, Arjuna, don't fight. How is it going to work? He told Arjuna, Arjuna, if you don't fight for 10 days, and you sit there without fighting, in your dream, this vasana will come and you will be killing thousands of people in the dream. He has to. He can't escape from that because it's already there in him. It has come out. So Arjuna, he says to Arjuna, Arjuna, the right thing for you to do is to fight the war because the vasana is already there in him. But while doing that, do it in this way where he explained to Arjuna through the process of karma yoga to come out of it. Now, in the Bhagavatam, if you look, you will see there are great, great sages who are great yogis as well. Have you noticed some great yogis there? For example, let's look at this way. Saubhari. You know the story of Saubhari, don't you? Saubhari, in the ninth canto, he was a great sage and he was absorbed in meditation a lot. So what he did, he was getting distracted in the world outside. Mind, he could not focus on the form of meditation. So what did Saubhari do? Saubhari was a great personality. Saubhari, what he did was, he went underneath the water and stayed underneath, he could control his breath and started meditation underneath the water. So while he was meditating underneath the water, he saw the fish having a great time there underneath the water. When he saw that, the desires came back. That is how quickly, if you have any desire inside, and if you get an opportunity to excite that by any reason, it will come out. Saubhari stopped all the meditation, came out, and wanted to get married. Wanted to get married. Desire is there, it hasn't gone. What can you do? So what did he do? Desire is not leaving. So he went to the king, Mandhadava, I think, in the Bhagavadam, and told him that marry one of your daughters to me, he says. And this person lying in the water for months and years together, the whole body was looking like a seal or something. You know, from the North Pole, you see some people, how some of those animals who are in the water all the time, if you look at their body, it was looking very too much. all the skin was very, how to explain that? Very, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. So skin was looking very funny, and And Mandadav didn't know what to say to him. He had 50 beautiful daughters. And when they heard that Mandadav is discussing about their marriage, they all ran away from there. After seeing this person with this long beard and looking very, very ugly and sick looking person. Mandadav said to him, Mandadav thought about it. If you say no to him, he will curse. And then whole kingdom could be in trouble. And if you say yes, the daughters will not be very happy. So you can see Mandadav was an intelligent king. So Mandadav told him that I can't select one daughter for you, but you can marry any one of them. Any one of whom you like. He put it in a very diplomatic way to Saubhari. So this Saubhari, what he did, he understood, sensed the situation. He's a yogi, isn't he? Immediately changed his form into a very beautiful and good-looking young man. He changed his body. And through the yogi power, and he went to the, walked into the palace of the women, all these daughters who were living there, 50. When all 50 of them saw him so beautiful and so attractive, they all wanted to marry him. Earlier, nobody wanted to marry him. Now all the 50 wanted to marry him. But Saubhari was a little great sage, he was, like many other great sages, very intelligent. So he said that if all of you want to marry me, I'm going to expand into 50 bodies. And Saubhari expands into 50 bodies, and his idea was to wipe out that vasana from inside. So what did he do? He expanded in 50 bodies. And what he has to finish in 50 lifetimes, he finished in one lifetime. You understand how it happens in yoga system? This is the beauty of Ashtanga Yoga. Every yoga system has its own interesting aspect. Today we can't do any of these things. That's another thing. But there were people like that, these yogis and these sages. They were so powerful that 50 lifetimes prarabdham, he wiped it out in one lifetime. Why? He expanded himself to 50 forms and married all the 50 girls and finished all his household life through with these 50 girls. With these 50 girls. So what happened to him? At the end of this lifetime with these 50 girls, they gave up the body and he went back to the spiritual world. Otherwise, it could have taken, according to our calculations, he would have had to live another 50 lifetimes. That is how he squared it up. Who? Saubhari. In the yoga process, this is possible. There are other examples in the Bhagavatam. If you remember, Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi. Do you know that, don't you? In the third canto. It's a very interesting story. You may wonder, when Kardama Prajapati came to know about Devahuti Devi's desires, Kardama Prajapati was a realized soul. But when he spoke to, after marrying Devahuti Devi, he realized Devahuti Devi still wanted to have a proper household life, family life. She wanted. Kardama Prajapati did not have that intention, actually. But knowing well, but Devahuti Devi has served Kardama Prajapati very well. In the Bhagavatam, you will see this. So after seeing that, Kardama Prajapati understood Devahuti Devi has a lot of desires inside. So what did Kardama Prajapati do there? He expanded himself into 9 forms and 9 daughters were born from Devahuti Devi. In order to minimize Devahuti Devi's household life to the minimum, Kardama Prajapati expanded into 9 forms and had a relationship with Devahuti Devi. That is why you see there, when they finished their travel in all the heavenly planets and all other places, when they came back from that special aircraft sent from Vaikuntham, when they came back, Devahuti Devi had 9 girls there to be married. And why? To bring that vairagyam in Devahuti's heart. If we have desires inside, that desire, if I tell someone, please don't desire, give it up. It won't go. It will stay. It's not possible to wipe it out like that. So therefore, in Vedas are telling us, there is a process by which you can remove this vasanas, which comes in the form of prarabdham very strongly inside. And these two examples, Saubhari's example, as well as the example of Devahuti Devi, is to show this to us. How yogis, through their yogic power, wipe out prarabdham in that way. Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga process. Kardama Prajapati was a great devotee. when we classify devotees, we should not simply think that they are all separate. They are not separate. These great devotees, they have yoga power, they have knowledge, they have also bhakti, everything in them. It's not that they only have bhakti or only have knowledge. No, they have other things, and they will utilize what's necessary for their progress. Well, their intention is to go back to spiritual world, not to waste time here anymore. So that is the way it, Karno Prajapati did that. To help Devahuti Devi, expanded himself into 9 and had 9 children when they finished their travels. And Devahuti Devi was satisfied. And after that, you know the story, as 10th one, Kapila Vasudeva himself came, and because Devahuti Devi was ready by then to hear the spiritual knowledge from Kapila Maharshi. So Kapila instructed Devahuti Devi on the science of self-realization, which you know, teachings of Lord Kapila, that is their teachings. Because only then Devahuti Devi was receptive to hear. When we have all these desires inside, it is not possible to discuss spiritual life. It's not possible. Very, very difficult. We may hear something, but it will come and go through the other. Yeah, because this mind is such a thing that it will create difficulties to accept the transcendental message. So anyway, so that is the story of Saubhari and Kadam Prajapati, two personalities in the Bhagavad. Then, in the Jnana Margam, now this is in the Yoga Margam, Karma Margam. In Jnana Margam, the process is different. There, you are not going to fight against the Prarabdham. You allow the Prarabdham to go through. While body is going, who goes through Prarabdham? You have to remember, the soul doesn't go through any Prarabdham. The self, individual self inside, not the jiva, false ego, but the soul inside has nothing to do with Prarabdham. Prarabdham is all for the body, mind, ego, intelligence. This is what's experiencing Prarabdham. And because we identify with the body, we think that we are going through it. That's why it happens. Actually, nothing to do with the soul. But similarly, in Jnana Margam, what they do, because the deep realization of not being this body is cultivated so strongly that when some Prarabdham is happening to the body, Prarabdham can happen in different ways. Strictly speaking, all our experience in this world is nothing but Prarabdham. Nothing but Prarabdham. Prarabdham decides how we will live in this world. Prarabdham decides what kind of relationships we will have in this world. Prarabdham will decide what kind of life we will lead here. And Prarabdham will decide when this body should go. That's called Prarabdham. As I said, throughout Bhagavatam, you will see this Prarabdham discussed. And normally, it is never touched. That is a law. Because it has already come out from the package inside, from the subtle body, it has already come out. Prarabdham has come out. So therefore, nothing you can do about it. You can follow these processes and changing Prarabdham is very difficult. But in the Jnana Margam, normally you accept the Prarabdham and allow the body to go through it. And when the body is experiencing the distress, misery of the world, in whatever form, birth, death, old age, disease, whatever form, that's Prarabdham comes. The person is conscious of all the time that it's the body that is experiencing, not me. So if you are situated in that state, Prarabdham won't hurt you so much. It won't hurt you. Otherwise, Prarabdham hurts us a lot, isn't it? We all get hurt by the Prarabdham. And so therefore, that is a process from the Jnana Margam. Process from the Jnana Margam. So, in different fields, in bhakti also there is Prarabdham. Not that devotees don't have Prarabdham. Devotees also have Prarabdham. Prarabdham is what is this gross body means. Gross body means. So, Prarabdham is not easy to escape. That's all we have to say at this point in time. Anyway, so this Prarabdham, what Srinarada Maharshi talks about that, later on in the Bhagavadam, you will see Jadabharata talking about that. Have you seen that? He had to take 3 births, isn't it? He had to take 3 births. First as the King Bharata, then he had to change in the body of a deer, and then he has to come in the form of a Brahmana, who was very Jatavarada. Jata means who was very daft and deaf like person, who doesn't have any interest in this world. That was his prarabdham it is. He himself says that. Arabdham asnan abhimana shunyaha. Arabdham or prarabdham, what is called, anandam asnan abhimana shunyaha. He says to Rahugana, Jadabrata says, Rahugana, it's like this, if you want not to come back here again, this prarabdham must finish in this body. In order to finish that prarabdham, first thing is, you have to be free from false ego and suffer through it. You accept all the miseries of this world, but without any false ego inside. Because if you have false ego, what will happen? You will react to the situation, isn't it? Suppose something comes against you in this world, normal tendency is to react to that, opposing that, isn't it? And that is, who is opposing that? The ego inside. Who is doing that? It's the ego inside, isn't it? Abhimana. Abhimana means the ego inside. So, Jadabharata says to Rahugana, Rahugana, the right thing to do is don't react to situations like that. Take it that it is your prarabdham, and without abhimanam, without pride inside, live your life in this world. Whatever comes, tolerate, and go through it. That way, what's happening is, prarabdham runs out, and then you can escape from here. Don't create any more prarabdha vasana for the future anymore. That is the instructions from Jadabharata to Rahugana. In numerous places you will see prarabdham discussed in the Bhagavatam. But the principle is this, that prarabdham, you can't wipe it out by any means. It's not possible. It has to be experienced and you have to live through it and run it out and exhaust it in that way. So that is the principle in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here, interestingly, in the bhakti process, fortunately, Krishna is telling us, even this prarabdham can go if you chant the holy name. It is one of the greatest benedictions in the bhakti process. That chanting holy name, if it is chanted properly, that is of course subject to all these things. Not that I have chanted 192 rounds or 200 rounds. Just like the way Krishna has spoken about the holy name in the Bhagavatam, where it says that holy name has got the potency to minimize this prarabdham, provided the holy name is chanted with the proper way, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says through that. Nathanam na janam na sundarim kavidam va jagadisha kamayi mama janmani janmani ishwari bhavadad bhakti rahai dugitvayi. Isn't it? Tranarabhi shunichena tarorabhi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. With all these things, if one chants the holy name, then it can bring the effect of impact of prarabdham. Prarabdham, that is how in the bhakti margam, prarabdham is destroyed. That is the process in the bhakti margam. That's why you will see many great devotees who have studied Srimad Bhagavatam very well, they have all taken to the process of chanting the holy name. Even today, it is going on. Many people you will see in Vrindavanam chanting the holy name because they understood that this chanting process is the easiest process compared to that Yoga Margam of Saubhari or Kardama Prajapati, or compared to the process of Jnana Margam by the great Jnanis. All of them are difficult. This chanting holy name is also not easy. Let's not get it wrong about it. If we think of chanting, not that you can just make some sound and get out of it. That's not what it meant. What it is saying is that if we chant the holy name like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has spoken, that Tranaravi Shunijaya, Tharoravi Sahishuna, Amanina Maradena, Kirtaniya Sadahari, and all the other 8 verses along with that, if all that is followed rigidly, and if we chant, chanting is sufficient to bring the prarabdham down. You can wipe the prarabdham off in that way. Otherwise, there is no other way. It's only to go through it. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is not many cases, even with great devotees, where Krishna has interfered in anybody's prarabdha. You can see that. Every devotee had to go through. Kunti Devi had to go through. Bhishma had to go through. Every one of them had to go through their prarabdha. No concession over that. There is one devotee where Krishna had shown some concession to one devotee. And that too, his prarabdha was very heavy. Can you imagine? A great devotee of Krishna, no food to eat at home. What do you think? Great devotee of Krishna, there is no food at home to eat. So if that is what spiritual life is all about, how many of us will be there in spiritual life? That's a question we have to ask, isn't it? But this particular devotee, Sudama, he lived like that throughout life. No prasadam anytime. Even while visiting Krishna, you know how he had to go through to collect that flat rice, how much he had to suffer through. Wife is at home, children at home, no food to eat. And is the husband sitting there and chanting Hare Krishna. How many wives will allow that? So you can see, it's not so simple. It's not so simple. Wife is starving, husband is starving, children are also starving, all together starving and discussing Brahman, the absolute truth. How will that happen? So there, Krishna had to show some concession. Krishna had to show some concession. Normally, Krishna doesn't easily move from his decisions. But it's only in Sudama's case, there is a little concession Krishna has shown because, not because of Sudama, because of his wife. When Sudama's wife told Sudama to go and see Krishna, Sudama had no problem going and seeing Krishna. But Sudama made it a point to his wife, I will not ask anything from Krishna. So, you know what Sudama's wife said? If after seeing you in this form, if he has not given you anything, it's no point in asking such people anymore anything. This is exactly the conversation between Sudama and his wife. Because if you look at Sudama's body, all the veins were coming out. You can see every blue line in the body and the bones were all sticking out and the stomach has gone so inside, you don't even know whether there was a stomach existing anymore. And the dress was so soiled, he's called Kuchela in the Bhagavatam. Sudama is called Kuchela. Kuchela means one whose clothes are very soiled and dirty. He was wearing that. And Damanisandaram. And of hunger, such a deep hunger he had inside, there was no food in the stomach. Drinking water and satisfying himself. And he says to his wife, Grihe Kalyani Diyadam. Kalyani means auspicious. His wife addressed like that and says to her that I will not ask anything from Krishna. I will not ask anything. Wife says to him, you don't have to ask anything. You just go there. And after seeing you, if he hasn't felt anything, then such people is no point in asking anyway. Isn't it? I mean, which is understandable. Her words are very correct. She is very right in saying that. So when Sudama went and saw Krishna in the palace, and when all the people saw Krishna running down from the palace to take Sudama upstairs and seated him in the throne where he sits, and Rukmini asked Rukmini Devi to bring water to wash the feet, and Krishna is sprinkling the feet on his head, and so many things are going on, all the local people in Dwaraka were looking at this and thinking, who is this person Krishna is giving so much importance to? They didn't think he was very important because seeing his dress and seeing his appearance, they didn't think of him very important. But when they saw Krishna doing all these things, they were very curious to find out who this person is. They didn't know about him. So they all assembled in the palace and Krishna has offered them, discussed with Sudama about his childhood at the school together in Sandivani Mani Maharshi's ashram, and mutually they exchanged all the family matters they spoke about. So interesting family discussion between Krishna and Sudama there. Sudama says to Krishna, you got married after you left Gurukulam. They are together, isn't it? Krishna, Balaram and Sudama, they were together with Sandivini. You got married and now you are having a, such a wonderful householder life? Is everybody happy in your family? And all kinds of questions like householders will ask each other. So Sudama asked us all these questions. So Krishna in reply, if you look Bhagavatam, you will see this. He said, says to Sudama, that after leaving Sandivani Maharshi's ashram, I understand that you got married, isn't it? Sudama says, yes, I got married. After that, Krishna didn't ask anything, whether you are living okay or anything like that. He didn't say one word. Krishna kept quiet about it. Didn't say anything because he thought that that will be very cruel to ask. Seeing him, Krishna immediately sensed that situation is particularly bad, that there is nothing at home to eat, and he had come, and Sudama was feeling awkward to take out that flat rice which he has brought with him. It has stones inside, and to give it to this Dwaragadish, Supreme Personality, Krishna, to offer this was difficult for him. So he was hiding it. And Krishna found it out that he was hiding something. Krishna pulled it out and took it forcefully, ate it, gave something to Rukmini and told everyone to share it. And he was feeling, Sudama was feeling very, very depressed about it, because he couldn't understand that how Krishna will relish this flat rice what he brought from his village. And that too, she had to beg to get it from some shops. Anyway, after all this was over, Sudama never asked one thing from Krishna. Next day morning, Sudama was leaving. Krishna accompanied him all the way there. And still Sudama was not asking anything. And Krishna didn't know what to do. If he asked, straight away he was ready to give. But he's not asking anything. Somebody is not asking you anything. And if you have to give something to him, it's very difficult, isn't it? Somebody asks, it's very easy to give it. And Sudama is that person which is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Nirabeksham munim shandam nirvairam samadarshinam anubrajamyaham nityam puyeyetyangri renubhi. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam when Krishna says to Uddhava, these are the devotees I look forward to see such devotees. What kind of devotees? Who will not ask anything from me. Nirabeksham. Krishna doesn't want to see us. You know why? The one reason is very clear. He will avoid us as much as possible, because the moment we see Krishna, we will say, Krishna, why don't you do this for me, do that for me. Krishna doesn't like this kind of devotees who are asking all the time. Whereas those devotees, nirabeksham munim shandam, nirabeksham means no desire inside. They will not ask anything and they have no desire itself inside. Munim shandam naruairam samadarshinam. And they have that reached that stage of realization. No desires inside, all vasanas has been driven away, has gone, or got burned itself inside because of the power of the knowledge inside of the realization of the soul. The happiness is coming from the soul, like Bhagavad Gita says that, isn't it? Prajahadi yadakaman sarvan parthamanogadan, isn't it? Prajahadi yadakaman sarvan parthamanogadan. Atmanyev atmana tushta tasya karyam na vidyade. Krishna is saying, one who is enjoying the soul, for him there is nothing to get in this world. For him there is nothing to acquire in this world. Atmanyev atmana tushta. He is situated on the platform of the soul, and all the happiness what he wants is coming from the soul. Because he has become the soul. He is not the body anymore. Atmanyev atmana tushta tasya karyam na vidyade. Krishna says in the second chapter. So that is Sudama's situation. So here Krishna has got a problem, not Sudama. So Krishna didn't say one word to Sudama. Sudama goes home, and you know what happened there? Whole thing has changed. So what I was saying is that Sudama chanted holy name. Sudama has chanted holy name. All the devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they chant the holy name. But important, you should not misunderstand that it is an easy process. Because it is chanting holy name, it's all very simple. And whereas the yoga margam and jnana margam and karma margam is very, very difficult, but chanting holy name is easy. Chanting the holy name is not easy, because only if chanting is performed exactly the way like the acharyas have given us, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said in the Shitashtagam, only then that chanting is effective. It will have its results also in the same way. Jihwe muhu japa. Skin the tongue to chant the holy name all the time. So that is the importance of the the different processes in how in different ways they wipe out prarabdha karma, how they wipe it out in different ways. Prarabdham through bhakti margam, through jnana margam, yoga margam, karma margam, different ways they do that. In the Bhagavad Gita you will notice some of the things mentioned there. So these are the principles inside Bhagavad Gita, which we will discuss later when we get to that. Coming back now to where we stopped last time, which I'm sure we all remember very well. So, what were we discussing? We were discussing the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? The 11th chapter. So, there we talked about this, the problem with the mind. Problem with the mind. Great devotees are saying, hand over the mind to Krishna. That is the one process. If you hand over the mind to Krishna, let Krishna control the mind, then if anything, the mind will always play its game. But you can't do anything about it. Whole yoga process is about controlling the mind, isn't it? It's about controlling the mind. So, so once you hand over the mind to Krishna, that is the devotee's process. Devotee's process is handing over the mind to Krishna. Jnani's process is to ignore the mind. Everybody does it in different way. Jnani ignores the mind. He doesn't give any attention to the mind. Whatever mind dictates, he ignores it. As far as he is concerned, mind doesn't exist. The devotee says that is not possible for the devotee. So what does he do? He hands it over to Krishna. He says, from now on, whatever the mind does, it is Krishna's responsibility, not my responsibility anymore. Because mind will tell you so many things, isn't it? It's like a monkey. The mind is like a monkey. You will think about something, very next moment, exactly opposite, the mind will force you to do sometimes. Is it not? You know by experience how the mind works. So, so this mind is Devi Prakriti. You remember? Devi Hesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratteya Mam Evaye Prabhadyande Maya Medam Tarandide. So, Devi Prakriti is this mind. So, it is Devi Prakriti. Devi Prakriti, that is what in that Bhagavad Gita Krishna is saying, that Gunamayi. Gunamayi means the three modes of material nature. Three Gunam are there. Devi Hesha Gunamayi. This Devi Prakriti is Gunamayi. All the three modes of nature are present there, and they are present in the mind, in us. That is why we are unable to control it. If you can control the mind, means you can control the modes of nature, isn't it? But you can see yourself that the modes of nature are not under our control. It gets, moves us all the time from one mode to another, and sometimes mixed modes are there in everybody. Everyone has goodness, passion and ignorance in everybody. At different times, different modes predominates over the other. Just like normally, in the morning hours, mode of goodness predominates. By lunchtime, during the day, mode of passion predominates. And by evening, you can see that the mode of ignorance predominates strongly. That is the way, in a general way, it is spoken like that. This is the reason why we have all the sadhana done in the morning. At least in the mode of goodness. If you can do that, it will be a little better results from there, from the chanting the holy name in the morning. So prefer time. That's why we say Brahma Muhurtam and chant different ways. All spiritual activities are organized in the morning for this reason. That there is a slightly higher mode of goodness in the morning than in the daytime or in the evening. When we are intention, we have to say that it is Krishna's mind, I cannot do anything about it. So mind is full of vasanas inside. Mind means in the subtle body, it's full of vasanas. And I also mentioned about this, that we have two nature. One is our swabhavam, isn't it? Our swabhavam means our nature, prakriti as it is called. And the other one is our swarupam. Swarupam is same for everyone. All of us are soul, spirit soul. There is same in everybody. Krishna's part and parcel, whichever you want to address it, soul is present in everyone. But swabhavam, we all differ. We all differ in our swabhavam. So once we develop this nature of surrendering the mind to Krishna, in that case what will happen is, little by little, these vasanas inside the mind will leave us. Because we surrender to Krishna, it is Krishna who is controlling the mind from then on. And if Krishna is controlling the mind, the chances are that the vasanas won't pop up very strongly. You get the point? That is the reason why, if you look into Bhagavad Gita, you see that chariot where the horses, four, five horses. Yes, that.
Top middle.
In there, you'll notice that in the place of intelligence, Krishna is there. So if the mind is controlled by intelligence, mind is that rein which goes from the horses to Krishna's hands. That rein is the mind. And who is controlling the mind? Krishna is controlling the mind. So if you hand over the mind, that is what is meant to understand from that picture. Otherwise anybody can draw a picture like there's so many wars, battles and wars going on in this world. And nowadays these chariots and horses are not even important. We've got tanks and other things, more sophisticated things. But why is that picture given so important? Because of this reason. And it is from that Rathakalpana, it is called Rathakalpana. Rathakalpana means a chariot representing this body. In this body, the mind is the rein, the horses are the senses. Sometimes you will see there are four horses. In some pictures, there is a five there, isn't it?
Five.
What is that?
Top middle.
There is five. There also there is five, I think, isn't it?
That's four.
The reason five or four, both are correct. The reason is, five is there. There's five there, I think, yeah. Actually, it's five or four, both are correct. Sometimes you will see only four. Why? Reason, I'll tell you why. The five horses represents the five senses in us. The rein of the senses are controlled by the rope, isn't it? The rein, and that's the mind, and that is in the hands of Krishna, Krishna's hands. Krishna is at the intelligence. Intelligence is Krishna. So handing over that rein to Krishna's hands, that is what the devotee does. Devotee hands over his mind to Krishna. You drive the chariot now. If you do that, the chariot will reach the destination. If you don't give it to Krishna and you drive the chariot, it will topple very soon. It won't last very long. The chariot won't go very far. All this is implied in that, because it is from the Kathopanishad that chariot has come. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada has quoted that verses, isn't it? I think it is in the second chapter. Buddhistu saradhim vidhi. Let's just look at that. Prabhupada quotes that verses also from Kathopanishad to make us understand that where this chariot has come. It is in one of those verses, I think in the second chapter. Atmanam radhinam vidhi shariram radhamemava. That is a verse in Kathopanishad. Atmanam radhinam vidhi shariram radhamemava. Buddhistu saradhim vidhi manapragrahamemava. That is a verse in one of the purports. You will see that Prabhupada quoting that verses. Atmanam radhinam vidhi. Atmanam radhinam vidhi means the passenger in the chariot is the soul. This body is the chariot, isn't it? The passenger in this chariot is the soul. And Atmanam radhinam vidhi shariram radhame vava. Shariram, the material body, is the chariot. Buddhistu saradhim vidhi. The charioteer, which is Krishna there, is intelligence. And mana pragraham eva. Pragraha means that rein is the mind. So, from that Kathopanishad verse, Krishna has taken that and brought into Bhagavad Gita. That is how it has come into Bhagavad Gita. So the principle is this, that one should, as a devotee, one should hand over his mind to Krishna to control. What does that mean? If we hand over mind to Krishna, what does that mean actually? Krishna won't come here and says to us that, look, I'll manage everything from now on. Krishna won't answer anything. What it means is that Krishna controlling means Bhagavad Gita controlling us. That is Krishna's words, isn't it? The words in Bhagavad Gita should control our life. Otherwise it doesn't mean anything else. That is what it means. That if you use Bhagavad Gita to control your mind, Bhagavad Gita's knowledge is guiding you in your life, which means that you are under Krishna's control. Krishna means Bhagavad Gita. It's no different from Bhagavad Gita. So if the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is totally gone in, sunk in, and that's controlling your understanding of life, your life in this world completely, it means that Krishna is controlling your life in all aspects. That's what it means. So from there you can see, we mentioned there also, that if you hand over to Krishna, these vasanas will go little by little. But mainly what this is what Krishna is saying as, staying in the Swarupam, staying in one's own spiritual identity, removing the Swabhavam from inside, wiping out our nature from inside, that is what Krishna is talking about. Staying in one's Swarupam. Swarupam means our identity, which is spirit soul. We are spiritual by nature, isn't it? All of us are spiritual by nature. But what we have got with us is this Swabhavam in us, which is not same for everyone. So Krishna is saying, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, situated in the platform of the soul, identifying yourself with the soul, always try to wipe out this Swabhavam from inside. And removing the Swabhavam from inside, at the moment what's happening is, what's manifesting outside is our Swabhavam, isn't it? Our Prakriti, nature. And this nature, our Swabhavam, has got very powerful vasanas inside and also very weak vasanas there. And the weaker vasanas, the smaller ones, which are not very powerful, you can remove it by your own way, in your own way. Some of them you can remove it, the weak vasanas inside. But powerful vasanas, you cannot do anything with that. That is what we were discussing last time when we discussed Bhagavad Gita. If you remember that, that powerful vasanas, you can't remove it on your own. You need Krishna's help. The smaller vasanas, you can remove it by your own effort. Do you know what I'm saying, don't you? That in us, there are all kinds of vasanas inside us, isn't it? Certain things, through your effort, you can control your life. Your vasanas, you can check. But certain things, even with your effort, you cannot check. We have examples in the Ramayanam, Bhagavatam and all, personalities like that. We talked about this example of Hanuman. You remember? Hanuman was a monkey, wasn't it? It's a monkey. Hanuman is a great devotee. It's a great devotee. And if you look into the discussion between Sita Devi and Ramachandra about Hanuman, both of them consider Hanuman as a perfect person. Perfect personality. In knowledge, in speech, in action, in every way, completely controlled Hanuman was. Completely controlled. Ramachandra gave him such a high recognition after the war to Hanuman, and he says that if there is one person who has studied Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, Atharvavedam, everything completely, you will see these qualities, and all those qualities are in Hanuman in full, he says. About Hanuman. How did he say like that? Because when Hanuman came to see Ramachandra first time, Sugriva sent him there, isn't it? Sugriva was taking shelter, frightened from Bali. He was taking shelter in Hrishyamogachalam. Hrishyamogachalam means where sages live, and that place was inaccessible for Bali to go. Bali couldn't go there. So Bali had a problem. Bali wanted to kill Sugriva. And Sugriva was living in this place, Hrishyamogachalam, where Bali couldn't enter because he was cursed. If he get entered there, he will die straight away. So Bali wouldn't go and Sugriva was living there. And Hanuman was Sugriva's minister. So Sugriva sent Hanuman to go and speak to Rama and Lakshmana and bring them over to Sugriva. Bring them over to Sugriva to negotiate. That Sugriva came to know that Ramachandra is leaving, Sita Devi has been kidnapped, and they are looking for Sita Devi. And he also knew about Ramchandra and Lakshmana, that they are very powerful personalities. So they wanted their assistance to kill Bali. So mutual agreement on that basis. That is the story side. But when Hanuman came to see Ramchandra and Lakshmana, Sita Devi wasn't there. And Hanuman came and saluted Ramchandra and paid his respects to him and to Lakshmana. And the whole conversation, if you read in Valmiki Ramayanam, you will see there what a beautiful way of presenting himself to both of them, to Ramchandra and Lakshmana. Not ignoring Lakshmana, not ignoring Ramchandra, keeping a proper balance, he was speaking, number one. Number two, the words he used were so selective. Ramchandra says, how come such a beautiful, how is he able to speak so well? And Ramchandra says to Lakshmana, this person must have studied Rigvedam very well. Otherwise, you can't speak like that. With such precision, without any mistakes, the language is so fine. A cultured and such a fine way, he presented himself. And then he turns to Lakshmana and says to him that unless he has studied Samaveda very well, this musical way of speaking cannot be there in his... It was like a flow. Ramchandra wanted to sit and listen to that, the way Hanuman spoke. Yeah. So all these things happened. And he says, if he had such a humility, what he saw in Hanuman, he says he must have mastered, perfected Yajurvedam very well. So like this, he explains there, both Rigvedam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam, all the three Vedams are in perfection in Hanuman, he says there. And then what else? When Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, right on the flag, he sat there and listened to Bhagavad Gita. Who? Hanuman. Hanuman sat there and listened to Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, there are three kinds of listeners for Bhagavad Gita. You know, the first one is Hanuman, who has no questions. Anything, whatever Krishna was saying, Hanuman was enjoying listening to it. He was in absolute bliss. Why? Because transcendental knowledge, when it is coming from the absolute truth, and when a devotee like Hanuman listens to it, he feels ecstasy. Ecstatic experience. The truth is spoken, isn't it? And that Hanuman was enjoying, not one question he asked. Only at one point, Hanuman was in such an ecstasy, he jumped in and started speaking. And that time Krishna said, you know that this is not proper what you have done. He said, therefore, whatever you have spoken will not stay in this world. That's why Hanuman's commentary on Bhagavad Gita is the most popular one, but it's not available. It's called Paishajika Bhashyam. It's not available. Hanuman is coming by that. So the first class listener is Hanuman. In listening also, he was on the top. Why? Because you can see, Hanuman, a proper listener will have no questions. Proper listener will have no questions. You may wonder why it is like that. Because spiritual life and spiritual knowledge is not subject to question answers. Through the mind and intelligence, you can't understand spiritual life. It's a completely different plane. In a peculiar plane, if you listen to Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, you will get the message in. But not through your mind and intelligence. Shut your mind and intelligence away and listen. That is the principle. So, you can see the second class listener there, who? Arjuna. Why? Questions. Every chapter after finishing, Arjuna will say, that's alright, whatever it is, but ask these questions, he will say. Arjuna is us. In that sense. Like us. Everywhere questions, everywhere doubts, and one clarification of one doubt means another 10 doubts will come after that. So this way, this is the Arjuna. And then there is a third type of listener, Dhritarashtra. Even after listening, nothing has gone in. He says, oh, it's my son Duryodhana, I have to look after him. So what has he understood? Bhagavad Gita. So these three listeners, Dhritarashtra, Arjuna and Hanuman, is a typical example, or is it a representative of three types of listeners as well for Bhagavad Gita? For Bhagavad Gita. So in there you can see our Hanuman, such a noble personality, so cultured and so intellectual, so knowledgeable, he also found difficult to get rid of some vasana inside. You see? What is his vasana? Monkey's vasana, you know what monkey's vasanas are. Monkeys have a nature like very similar to us. What is that? As soon as some success comes in life, we want to celebrate it, party straight away. Party business. Partying, that we like it, isn't it? Party. So we are looking for an opportunity where to have a party. When can we have a party? So what happened to Hanuman was, he went to looking for Sita Devi into Ravana's palace, thinking that Sita Devi will be kept there, in kidnapped and kept there. When he went into the palace, it was night time, it was dark, and there wasn't enough light, and many people were sleeping there. He could enter into anyone's room and see who is there. Somehow or the other, he got into Mandodari's room. Ravana wasn't there. Ravana was trying to enjoy somewhere else. So Mandodari was sleeping, Ravana's wife was sleeping. He got in there and thought it was Sita Devi. It was a mistake that he misunderstood that Mandodari as Sita Devi. He mistook Mandodari as Sita Devi. So seeing Sita Devi, he got so excited. So what did he do? First thing, he pulled out his tail and started kissing the tail, like the monkeys do, and started jumping and dancing all over inside the palace to celebrate that, because it was an important mission for him to locate Sita Devi, isn't it? So that's what he's saying. So in fact, he is perfectly situated in Brahmanishtha. Brahmanishtha means in self-realization, Hanuman is. So always Hanuman's mood is, I am Ramchandra's servant, isn't it? I am Ramchandra's servant. That is his mood all the time. He will never ever pose himself as an authority on anything. I am Ramchandra's servant. That is his situation. So here, even when he saw Ravana, what did he say? Na Ravana sahasram me yudhe pradivalam bhaved. He says, thousands of Ravana can come, I can beat them up, he says. Who? Hanuman says this. Even if thousands of Ravanas come, I'll beat them up, he says. Now, if you read that, what does it mean is that I will pull out this whole Sri Lanka from here and fly, he said. Fly back to Ramchandra with Sri Lanka, he says, in the hand. So, if you may wonder, when he's speaking like this, is it false ego in Hanuman? No. Why? Because Hanuman was so surrendered that he always knew it's Ramachandra is working through his body. That's all. That was the degree of surrender in Hanuman. Sada Rama Ramedi, always chanting that holy name of Ramachandra. Completely taken shelter of Rama and Ramachandra. So if you ask this question, that if you show a devotee who is chanting the holy name in that way, like the way Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said in the Shikshashtakam, this is a perfect example. Always surrendered, that is the way to chant the holy name. So, here you can see that always Hanuman took himself as the as a instrument in Ramchandra's hands. Never thought he is doing anything. So that confidence of Hanuman is not coming from the ahankaram or false ego. Rather, it's coming from that surrender to Ramchandra. From that surrender, that confidence comes. He is so surrendered to Krishna, to Ramchandra, that he could speak like that. Such a degree of surrender in him. So, the three kinds of devotees who are listening to him, to Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, Hanuman, and Arjuna and Dhritarashtra. Yeah. When Valmiki says about this incident, Hanuman went to see Mandodari, he says, Aspodayama asachuchumba uchcham nananda chikrida jagau jagamam stambam marohan nipapada bhumau nidarshayan swam pragradim kabinam. Valmiki himself says, what can I say about a monkey? He says, what he says is, Aspodayama asachuchumba pucham, then Aspodayama, as soon as he got excited, he took his tail and started kissing the tail. And then Nananda Chikrida Jagau Jagamam. And then he was in a playful mood. And he started playing and singing. And And then Stambham Marohan Nipapada Bhubo. There was pillars in the palace. He started climbing on the pillar. Monkeys, isn't it? They can climb very easily. He saw them in Vrindavan, how they do a very nice job. You may sometimes be surprised how they get that balance, isn't it? Jumping from one tree to another tree, such a long distance they cover. And he says, Stambham Marohan Nipapada Bhubo Nidarshayan Swam Pragatim Kapinam. That he climbed the pillars, and then what they do? They'll fall down to the land. From the trees, you notice them, don't you? They'll climb the trees, and suddenly from the top of the tree, they'll fall onto the ground. And fall on their hands and legs. They can do that. Like the similar to the cats, they do also. So, this kind of playful nature in the monkey, Hanuman exhibited there, when all these things were happened. And then, Valmiki says there, what can I say? Prakritim kapinam. After all, he's a monkey, isn't it? He says, after talking about Hanuman so high, he says, this prakriti, it is not possible to change. It's not easy. These are very strong vasanas inside. This is with which we are built. Similarly, you can also see yourself these things. Suppose you have some strong vasana inside. You're fighting against that all the time. Isn't it? You know that. I don't have to say. We all have different vasanas in us. See, for example, someone who is very attached to nice prasadam, he will study everything, but when good prasadam comes, you'll find it difficult to resist. Is it not? We know that. That's how it is. We know that it's not good to eat a lot of prasadam. We also know that a lot of prasadam can get sick, or a lot of sweets, or a lot of preparations, you know you'll get sick. And you know that you're going to get sick after that. Still you will eat. Why? Why is that? Why is it like that? Because finding it difficult to resist that vasana from inside. In a similar way, there are many things in life which we find very difficult to resist, isn't it? So such vasana, which are very strong inside, Krishna is saying here that removing those vasanas, he says, unless there is Krishna's mercy, it's difficult to get rid of that. We have to admit these things. It's no point in posing ourselves as great sages who have complete control on the mind and the, you know, like in the modern days, a lot of people do like that. But that's not right. Well, that way we won't get out of the problem. Problem is still there. So that's what he said here. That so here you can see Hanuman, when he heard Bhagavad Gita, he straight away captured the message. He had no problem. Arjuna had questions. Dhritarashtra could not understand anything. The three different kinds of listeners. So, but that monkey nature has not left him. Even like a personality like Hanuman. So if it is like that for Hanuman, you can imagine our situation in these things. So after they located Sita, Hanuman located Sita, Hanuman returned. And on the way back, he met all his other friends who have gone in different directions. They met each other and they were all going to go back to report that they have found Sita Devi. They had to report to Ramachandra. And Hanuman was the success, isn't it? So when all the monkeys, because they have gone in groups, you see, group went to south, group went to the east, went to the west and went to the north. So it is the one went to the south where Lanka is, Hanuman had the success. Hanuman was specially instructed to go to south and he had a group of assistants with him. So when Hanuman came back from Sri Lanka, they all joined together and they were going to go back to the to Ramachandra. So they thought, now that we have become successful in our mission, it's not proper to go back straight away. We have to have a party first. Some people are very fond of partying, you know that. They like, especially in the youth, when you are young, all you want is party, day after day. Sometimes when you see some young people, how busy they are with their parties going on every day, looking for an opportunity. Even after becoming devotees, we haven't given up that mood yet. We still have that party mood, always, isn't it? So here, why? Because vasana is there inside, that's the reason. Strictly, spiritual realization means you won't have such desires popping up every now and then. But then we give a coverage for that of a spirituality to it and make our party as good as we can. So here, so decided to have a decided to have a party. So that's what they decided. So what they did was, on the way back, they went to a garden. The garden belonged to Dadimukha. Dadimukha was the person who owned that garden. And staying in that garden, they started getting drunk. And then the party has begun. Valmiki says about that, Gayandi kejil, pranamandi kejil, nirtyandi kejil, prakasandi kejil, padandi kejil, vijarandi kejil, plavandi kejil, pralabandi kejil. He says here that some of them, Gayandi kejil, some of them were singing. Some of the monkeys were singing. Some were offering salutations to each other, and some were dancing, and some were laughing loudly, and some were falling down. Monkeys have this nature all the time. They just climb and then jump from there to the bottom, falling down. Some were moving in different directions, and some were jumping up. Some were talking without any sense. Getting drunk. By now they are all drunk. In Dadimukha's garden, there was a lot of nice fruits, and some of them were intoxicating as well, which they knew very well, because it was a well-known garden, Dadimukha's garden. So they enjoyed like this as much as they can, because they feel that before they go to Ramachandra, they should celebrate, because after that what will happen, they don't know. So they decided to celebration in advance before going to see Ramachandra. So, and those who have got Sangeeta Vasana, who have got musical talent, they started singing. And Anandakuta started dancing. And all this is mentioned in the Ramayanam to tell us that don't try to fight against your vasana too much. By fighting, you won't win. This is the message. Even personalities like Hanuman, if they have to go through this, why on earth, how on earth are we able to fight our vasanas very easily? But, some problems like this, so bhavam, will bring in life for all of us. So, but the thing is, what Krishna is saying here, I'm coming back to Bhagavad Gita now. Krishna's point is, if proper self-realization happens to you in a proper way, then even if your swabhavam is there in your mind and the body, even if it is comes out, it will not cause any problem. Problem means this. Suppose, this is a very difficult thing. Suppose you have some deep vasana inside for partying, right? And you have done some party. You had some party. Now, what has happened now? Through that partying, you have enjoyed, and it has created another vasana inside to enjoy more. Is it not? That is how vasanas work. This is the difficulty in karma vasana. Any vasana, if you allow that to flow through freely, and if it creates new vasana inside, that means that karma is not over yet. You are creating more karma for the future. That means you have to work another time to exhaust that vasana. That's the way vasana works. But if knowledge of the self has happened inside, suppose you have realized the self, even if vasanas comes out like this through your body and the mind, that even if you have to do something, it will not create another vasana. That is the advantage. Is that clear or not, what I'm saying? Suppose in the normal way, if you do engage in karma and your vasanas are getting released through karma, problem with that vasana is it will create new vasanas same time. But suppose you have followed the process of self-realization and understood that you are not this body, and if you have realized it, if realization has happened, or in other words, jnanam or knowledge has come inside and it started working, even if with the power of the vasana, if something comes through this body or the mind, it will not create new vasana, fresh vasanas. That is the point Krishna is making here in the Bhagavad Gita. This is why self-realization is so important. It's so important. The solution to the problem is nothing else. The solution to the problem is self-realization. That is the point Bhagavad Gita is stressing on all the time. I'll give you another example. Some time ago, Radhanath Maharaj went to see Mother Teresa. Probably you have seen he went to see her in Calcutta. And Mother Teresa is a very respected personality all over the world, and she has acquired great respect from many, many people for service, what she has done. If you look into that YouTube presentation between after this meeting Ratanath Maharaj had with Mother Teresa, he went and spoke about this in some university in America. That's where this discussion happened. So in that presentation he says that when he discussed this, when he met Mother Teresa, Mother Teresa told him that so many years I have done this in Calcutta now, looking after these destitute children and helping many women and children and providing them care homes and looking after them in different ways and helping to in her own style, whatever she was doing. And she has great faith in the controller, in the absolute nature of the God's control on this world. And so many things she speaks very nicely. She presents everything based on the Bible. She talks about that to Ratanath Swami. So, and she says to him, in spite of all these things I have done for so many years, when these children sometimes die, they die in my lap or in my hands, they die. Some of these children will never come to life because they were already sick when they were taken and they never got that. They were meant to die, or they happen like that. When they die, I look into their eyes, she says. I look into their eyes. When I look into their eyes, I see a sparkle there. I see a great sparkle in their eyes. And at that time I think, all these years what I have done hasn't really helped them. Why? Because she started realizing that actually the spirit soul inside wants something else more than this food and shelter, everything I have been providing them. She says that there to Ratanath Swami. She says this to him. And I think he has mentioned that in his what is that, biography or whatever that he has written. But this is in the YouTube, you can listen to this. He himself saying this, Ratanath Swami saying this about these words what Mother Teresa has spoken. If you go into YouTube, you'll find it there. You can listen to it, what he says. But the thing what he says is this, that there he says that she is full of love for other living beings in this world, isn't it? Mother Teresa is respected for that. That selflessly and without any selfishness, serving like day after day all these poor people is not an easy job. But in spite of all that, she acknowledges there that I have started realizing that there is something more necessary in life for them, not this simply providing food and shelter and looking after the children. She acknowledges that there, and he mentions that also in his lecture there in the university, whichever he has spoken. Now, why I'm saying that is that they talk about in that meeting after that, when Maharaj was talking about this, how important it is to love the fellow beings, love the other living entities in this world, how important it is to show devotion and seeing Krishna's presence in other living entities, everything. Everything is good, everything is correct also. But there is a question there. The question is this. Krishna's point is, all these things will only happen if you realize what you are first. It is not possible to love another living entity when you yourself do not know what you are. First thing, that is why Krishna is giving so much importance to self-realization in the Bhagavad Gita. You won't find anywhere in the Bhagavad Gita discussing anything in terms of this service to humanity or cultivating, opening this, looking after the body. No, everything is centered around the soul. This is why Bhagavad Gita is given so much a very clear and direct instruction about the importance of realizing the self, about the importance of realizing the self. Because if you realize the self, automatically Krishna's presence in other living entities will be experienced by the one who has realized the self. He doesn't have to separately endeavor for that. That was the point. So this vasana is a very powerful thing. It is not easy to wipe it out. It's not. how, why did Mother Teresa had that vasana in her? It must have followed her from previous lifetimes. That she had that vasana, she must have cultivated before to serve the other living entities in that way. So everyone in this world is completely under the modes of material nature. And this is what is called modes of material nature. Modes of material nature is this vasana inside coming out in different ways. Even Vivekananda said this. When did he say that? He said he went to America to talk about in the Parliament of Religions and all that. He went and spoke there. And when he came back, he says that I've been thinking about it, he said, that is this all worthwhile at the end? It is his own words. That why? But why? Because there was some vasana inside to go and speak all these things there in Chicago, wherever that Parliament of Religions happened and all that. So, main thing is, Krishna's point in these verses, in this 11th chapter is, how do you make freedom from vasana? How you make it empty inside? That subtle body where all the vasanas are stored up, if you don't dry them up, dry it up, that means another material body is guaranteed again. What has already taken shape in the form of this gross body, which is prarabdham, you can't do anything about it now. That's closed chapter. That's a closed chapter. So that is why if the vasanas have completely burned out, the mind will automatically come into a state what is known as nirvikalpa sthiti. Nirvikalpa means there is no vikalpam inside. Vikalpa means, you know, the constant waves of thoughts coming through. That's all vikalpam. Vikalpam means that. Constant thoughts coming through inside, that is called vikalpam. So vikalpam, in order that vikalpam, when it completely stopped, in Shastram they call it, they use as nirvikalpam state. Nirvikalpa state. There is no more vikalpam anymore. So, and nirvikalpam state means there is no mind anymore after that. How can you stop the mind from functioning? The nature of the mind is, suppose there are people chant mantra to control the mind, and you can try chant the mantra for some time and stop the mind, but within very short time the mind will pop up again. And in fact, sometimes while chanting itself, the mind will be wandering somewhere. What to talk about the controlling the mind? And that you will know, you will never know what is going on. You'll start your 16 rounds, start chanting, and for 16 rounds, you will be in another world. When you finish, oh, you'll see, 16 rounds are over now. Then you start thinking, what were you doing all this time? And then you get the shock of your life, isn't it? That you have been busy with something. So, even while chanting, according to your vasana, it will go in different ways. It will start flowing in different direction. So, mind will not surrender very easily. That is the point. So, it is in that there that surrender becomes important. Surrender becomes important. What I am saying is that sadhana, if it is not executed with complete surrender to Krishna, that sadhana will be a long haul. Will be a very long haul. So this knowledge that completely surrendering to Krishna is more important than the sadhana itself, or than the sadhana itself. So therefore, whenever any vasanas are coming outside, from inside, any vasana which is coming out in some form, so instead of identifying with that vasana, rather thinking, who is experiencing this vasana? Who has this vasana? That is the most important question to ask at that time. So, and sometimes while engaging in chanting or in meditation also, different kinds of vasanas will come. Sometimes anger, sometimes hate, sometimes lust. Different kinds of desires will come out. Suppose while you are chanting and you had some problem with someone, you will be thinking about that while chanting, isn't it? You can't keep it out from your mind straight away. It's not possible. Say you have a problem with the wife, or a problem with the boss, or a problem with the children. All these things will be constantly coming back into your mind. When all these things happen, the Jnana Margam says, move away from that and try to think who's experiencing these emotions or these experiences. So, and this is Ahankriti. Ahankriti means this is how you capture that false ego inside. And if you manage to capture that false ego, and otherwise he you won't get him. The false ego inside, you won't get him because he always escapes from you. So nishesha moche sadi vasananam atmanubhuti pratibandha shunyaham. When all the vasanas are emptied inside, then immediately atmanubhuti, experience of the soul, will happen to a person without any obstacles. Pratibandha shunyaha, it says here. So when we succeed in clearing up the vasanas from inside in this way, they will slowly disappear, and that is the state when it, what Krishna calls it as Sobhava Vijayam. If you look in the 11th canto, Krishna talks about to Uddhava, Uddhava, what is heroic nature of a person? Uddhava asked the question, who is a hero? Uddhava asked the question. As far as Krishna is concerned, one who has managed to bring this Sobhavam or nature in a person under control and managed to escape from the grip of that Prakriti, nature, Krishna says, that is hero. He is a hero. This is Krishna's... Krishna addresses different things in different ways. Sobhava Vijayam Shauryam. Krishna says, Sobhava Vijayam. If you have managed, if you know what your Sobhavam is, and through your own effort, that means through cultivation of the knowledge, and by following this process of self-realization, if you have managed to destroy your vasanas inside and be able to be situated on the platform of the soul in the Swarupam, then you are known, you are addressed as Sobhava Vijayam. You have succeeded in your controlling your Sobhavam. Sobhava Vijayam Shauryam. Krishna says, he is Shura, he is a hero. It is not a person who has gone and fought the whole world and controlled the whole world, brought the whole world under his control. Krishna doesn't consider himself as a hero. One who has controlled his own Sobhavam and brought it under control, Krishna says he is a hero. We'll come to that later in the Bhagavadam also. So, it is like this. Every emotions, excitement, what we have in this world is like a black, dark cloud that's coming in the sky, isn't it? So, but behind the cloud there is the sky. Behind the cloud there is the sky. When we see the cloud, we won't see the sky. We won't see the sky. So then when we look at the sky, we say we only see the clouds at that time. We won't give attention to the sky behind it, the space behind it. We are not conscious of that. We look at the sky and we see only the clouds there. So similarly, whatever chittavritti is coming inside, all these thoughts that is coming inside, all of them is happening in the sky of Chit Shakti. Chit Shakti is the sky behind it, and if you are able to see these thoughts are coming and going, and if you not identify with the thoughts, rather with the person or for where it is happening, that is in the Chit Shakti, if you identify like that, then attention falls there and not in the Chittavritti. And let anything happen, but if your attention is in the Chit Shakti, not on the Chittavritti, then there is no problems. If the attention is on the... That's the only way you can get over this, you can get out of this this vasana. That is what Jnanamargam says. This is the process Jnanamargam follows. They know when Chittavrittis are following one after the other, they try to see the sky behind that, which is Chidagasham. Chittavritti happens in the Chidagasham. Where does all these thoughts come? It all happens in the mind, isn't it? In the subtle body. And where is that? It's happening in that Chit Shakti. Chit Shakti is behind it. These things cannot be proven by medical science or by the science. It is not possible. Why? Because that is why I'm saying, this mind, this body, this intelligence, this ego, is such a complex phenomenon, not even scientists, not even doctors can explain this. What is it? Clearly define this body. It's a completely unknown thing to everyone in this world. It is one of the most amazing things, isn't it, this body? that it is functioning today, tomorrow what will happen, nobody knows. Medical science is no answer. They have some solution to some problems, but they don't have, they can't precisely define and tell you this is how the body will function. They don't have an answer either. So therefore, these things you have only option is to accept what Krishna is saying there. And sages have told us, they are not expecting anything from us in return. Out of their mercy to us, what they experienced and how they got out from this complex phenomenon called mind, how they brought an escape from the cycle of birth and death, they saying to us, we have got it, here is a process, if you like it, you can have it. That's their approach also. They are not forcing anyone to take anything. They have left the option to us. That is the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita. We'll discuss it after 10-15 minutes. So, we're discussing about vasana, isn't it? It's one of the most interesting thing in the Bhagavad Gita. If you understand how these vasanas work, then you will understand a lot of other things what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita. See, according to science, what the modern science and other things, they have no understanding of the way the thing body operates. Body, they know a lot about the body, various things, even now they have understood the genes and other things, that's fine. But the way the subtle body operates, and like the way Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is talking about it, based on the realizations of these great sages, they are such an important and integral part of the Vedic philosophy. It is based on that. You will be amazed some of the things what Krishna has to say about this body. And only when you are in tune with Krishna's thinking, all what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita will make any sense to us. Otherwise it won't make any sense even, what Krishna is saying. Because these things are so important. These things are important. Krishna is saying there that this subtle body inside, what we have, which is mind, intelligence, false ego, chittavritti, all that, chittam all together, the package inside, where all the vasanas are stored up. Isn't it? Vasana means what has come with us from our previous life. So that means so many different bodies, so many different forms, species, isn't it? Different bodies, different species. And how many times in the human body, we don't know. How many times in the dog's body, cat's body, and tiger's body, lion's body, elephant's body, so many different bodies, snake's body, reptiles, all kinds of things. We have gone through all that. And eventually we have come to the human body. And even in the human body, we have changed the bodies many times. And all that vasanas are still there, still inside us, very much there. And the important thing here is that the effect of the vasanas in formulating your next body. That's the most important thing. Look at this way. Anytime a thought develops inside, and if it becomes stronger, that it has to develop into action. It has to get into a proper shape. For example, if I like to speak Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, it is some vasana that has followed me and it's not gone. And the only way is to get through this. There is no other way to speak. That means if a sangalpam has happened, that's what's called a sangalpam. Sangalpam means that in your mind you have thought about something. That is sangalpam. A sangalpam means some kind of thought you have developed inside. If that thought gets stronger, that has to happen in there, in that body. It has to happen. Say for example, sometimes you have felt a strong necessity to become thin. You are very fat and you want to become thin. And it hasn't happened in this life, then you may have to accept another body to get rid of that vasana from inside, to become thin. That's how complex the whole thing is. It's not a very light thing to wipe it out, because vasanas decide everything, what we are doing now and what we will do in the future and what will happen in the next life. For that, you may have to accept another body to become thin. Suppose you have strongly cultivated that vasana. Whole lifetime you have been thinking about becoming thin, you know, to lose weight. And constantly meditate on that, and it has become very, obsession inside. And it didn't happen in this lifetime. The next thing is, in next body it will happen. In another body it has to happen because it has taken a very powerful position inside, in one's psyche. That's how this psyche works inside. Similarly, opposite thing also. Suppose you wanted to become fat in this body and you are very thin. Then even if you don't become fat in this body, because in this body what will happen is prarabdham. Prarabdham will determine everything. Already decided. So that's all you can have in this body. But to become thin or to become fat, you may have to accept another body and become fat in the next life. All these are very complex things, and it is in the background of all these things we have to understand Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is not just that verses what Krishna has spoken there. Behind that there is a lot of packaged things behind it. So similarly, in some previous lifetime, if you have desired something, it will come in this lifetime. It can come in this lifetime. That's why you can see the tendency in everyone is different, isn't it? We all act in different. Some people have a tremendous capacity for technology and things like that. Why is that? Because in previous lifetime, he must have developed a special taste for that kind of activity. And that has followed him in this lifetime. Therefore, what Krishna does, material nature, he puts him in a position where those things can happen, that vasana can fructify in him. So, when that is happening, if you do not develop another desire while executing that work, and without thinking that I'm doing this a great service to the world, and without creating any kind of attachment to any of them, and without expecting anything from that work, if you do it like that, after some time what will happen is, you will get separated from that vasana. You will be able to do the work without any connection with the vasana. That means without creating new vasana, you can continue working in this world. This is the principle behind it. It's nothing but karma yoga. Karma yoga spoken in another way. Krishna is saying here that previous vasanas that has come with this in our life, if in this life, if you know that you have some strong vasanas in direction, a particular direction, either through music, some people are very fond of music, isn't it? It's not there. Two people have gone to the same teacher to study music. One has become a star, the other one has dropped out. Why? Where is that come? Because one had the vasana from previous life. That is what has followed him. So everything like this clicked. Same thing spiritual life also. If you have cultivated spiritual life in previous lifetime, everything becomes very easy in this lifetime. This is what the way it works. It's that vasana that has followed us, develops into action, and you fly through that very easily. So here, what Krishna is saying here, that if you know what your vasanas are, and if you are working through that, if you are able to do it in such a way that you are not creating any more attachment to it, but just doing it as though it's coming through you, and you are not expecting anything from that, if you do it in a completely detached mode, if you do it like that, even if you work in that way, it won't cause any problem. Whereas, sometimes people get into this difficulty. They get attracted to some particular kind of work. Particular kind of work. Anything, it can be anything, isn't it? You know that, I don't have to say. If you have worked in offices, you will notice some people, they'll have very excessive attachment to the kind of work what they are doing. So, what will happen? Because it gives him, it is fulfilling his that strong vasana inside, he's getting a fulfillment from that. He's getting a fulfillment. Whether it is sports, whether it's music, whether it's any kind of activity for that matter, in all of them, this vasana influences all the way through. So That is why Krishna says here, if you have managed to break away from that and continue doing that without expectation of any benefits from that, and if you do like that without any connection with that, just like a machine, you can operate. And then it will not bind you. It will not bind you. On the other hand, if you kept on desiring that I want to continue doing this, you have to remember in what background Krishna is saying all these things. From karmam, knowledge won't come. This is the first principle. By simply by doing things, spiritual realization won't happen. It won't happen by doing things. It is by realization has to happen inside. And that's not coming from karmam. We have this big misconception in our head. Everything in this world we do and we get it, the result, isn't it? So when we come to spiritual life also, what do we think? What should I do now to realize the self, we say? Is it not? That's the first question we'll ask. What should I do now? You can't do anything. Actually, karmam is performed by the material nature. We are not even doing that. Even this basic understanding we haven't got, and then we are trying to realize the self. Material nature is doing everything through us. That is the first principle. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankaram vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. That is the most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is saying to Arjuna, understand this. Prakriti is doing everything. Prakrite kriyamanani, and how gunai karmani sarvasha, through the gunam, three modes of material nature. We think ahankara vimudhatma. Due to my hunger and false ego inside, I am thinking, I am the doer. Kartaham iti manyate. I am doing everything. I falsely keep on declaring this to the world, I am the doer. So this is our disease, what we have got. And Krishna is saying to us, Arjuna, understand this. That is why Krishna, if you look Krishna's words to Arjuna, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, Arjuna, don't try to tell me that you are going to make this decision. It's not in your control. If I tell you not to fight and sit down there, you are not able, even if you, the bow and arrow will wake up on its own and start telling Arjuna, you get up now. You have to fight. It's already there. You brought it with you. You can't escape. The right thing to do, he says to Arjuna, do this, what you have to do, but knowing very well that Prakriti is doing it. Prakriti is doing it through you. In that consciousness, if you do it, you don't expect any results and you don't have any ownership of the work. So it's a very subtle thing what's happening there with Arjuna. And you can see from the modern scientific point of view also, scientists are saying a person is present in his genes. They are saying that, isn't it? The modern science is saying the genes. Genes will already decide a person's nature. The genes are going to decide the person's nature. What does it mean at the end? All that it means is what Krishna is saying here. That a person is not simply his head and legs and hands, but it is rather this genes or which is present in him in the form of vasana in every cell. And that will create its own way. It will push that person to work in a particular direction according to the vasanas what he has got. So here, Krishna's point is that if you do not perform these activities, which are based on the vasanas, and without thinking that I'll continue doing this forever, and does not create more desires that you want to be in control all the time, and you want to make sure the whole world knows about it, what I am doing, and if you do like that, what will happen? Krishna is saying here, it will give you a lot of, it will bind you to this world very strongly and give you a lot of distress at the end. This is the principle. See how karma yoga, subtle side of the karma yoga. That if we get to know our vasanas well, and if we are driven by the vasanas, thinking that, well, I'm good at this particular work, what I'm doing, and I enjoy doing it. People say like that, isn't it? I enjoy doing it. I'm very good at it. Any field for us, doesn't matter. But if we get attached to that and instead keep on creating new asanas based on this activity what we are doing, then eventually what will happen is one day, Krishna is saying here, naturally you will become famous because you have become very specialist and expert at it. And that vasana, if you keep on creating inside, it will bind you to this world and it will give you a lot of distress at the end. It will give you a lot of distress at the end. Because the sankalpam inside, what you have developed, it has to materialize some point, somewhere. So instead of creating new sankalpam inside, wipe out the sankalpam, that is the principle behind it. This includes even spiritual activities. Even spiritual activities. Even if it is material activities, if there is no, it's not creating any vasana inside, then it will not bind you. It will not bind you and it will not give you any distress. But even if it is a spiritual activity, if there is vasana inside or if there is desires inside, it will bind you and it will give you distress at the end. How important it is to execute karmam in the proper way in this world. That is the message. So, knowing very well that is my swabhavam, my nature, whether it is good or whether it is bad, both we have to wipe it out. Both we have to wipe it out. Because swarupam is my spiritual identity. Swabhavam is the nature. And that can be good or it can be bad. Both of them are dangerous. Both of them are dangerous. Both good swabhavam and bad swabhavam. Because it is swabhavam. Swabhavam means what has happened. There's so many verses in the Bhagavad Gita. You have to take this word and look at swabhavam. Swabhavam, Krishna is saying there that swabhavastu pravartate. There is a statement in the 18th chapter. Who is doing it? Everything what we do, swabhavastu pravartate. Krishna says swabhavam is doing that. You are not doing that. And it's a very difficult thing to come to terms with. So the only way, Krishna is saying here, that both good one and the bad one, you have to get rid of them. And if you want to do that, you have to add the knowledge of the self to it. That is the way to get rid of them. Including the knowledge of the self. Jnanam should be added to that. So if you add the knowledge to it, what will happen? The way of action will change. How we execute the action will change. To give you an example, a person, he ate a lot of ghee. In his cooking, he used a lot of ghee and ate a lot of ghee. And he became sick. He became sick. If you take a lot of ghee, you'll get sick. You can try if you want. A lot of ghee means you'll get sick because it won't digest easily, isn't it? So this person got sick and he went to the Ayurvedic doctor. So the Ayurvedic doctor told him, I'll bring some medicine. And then he brought some ghee from inside and gave it to him. And so he says to the doctor, why are you giving me ghee again? I'm fully sick with the ghee and you are giving me more ghee. He says, no, the doctor said to him, this is ghee, but there is something added to it. If you take this, you will get sick, you will get cured, he said. So ghee was the problem. Solution is also ghee, but the difference is something has been added to that ghee to cure the problem. So similarly, karmam is the problem. Karmam is our problem. The karma vasana inside is so strong, very difficult to come out of it. And we are linking everything to the karmam, thinking that karmam will bring the result, karmam will bring everything. But karmam cannot help in these things. Knowledge of the self is more important. And Krishna is saying that because the problem, obstacle here is this karmam, that karmam kartrutva buddhi, that means I'm not the doer. And if you add this knowledge to it, that karmam, you can wipe it out from inside. And eventually, even if you do some karmam, it will not be karmam anymore. It will be karma yogam at that time. So in that state, a person, when he is executing the karmam, he does not think himself that it is, he only knows that it is happening through him. He doesn't take any more ownership at all. So any activity, whichever it may be, if you do it in that concept, for example, when you, every activity, you can get attached to it, isn't it? You perform any karmam, you'll get attached to it. It is a natural thing in this world. After a while you feel confident and you feel a certain attachment you develop. Nobody can do karma in this world completely hating it all the time. It's not possible. You have to get some pleasure out of it. Any work, it doesn't matter. So, if you continue doing like that, enjoying that work in that way, it'll create fresh vasanas inside. And Krishna's point is, if you do not allow vasanas to develop and you execute karma, you can escape from karma. Otherwise, it's not possible. Even while speaking Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, if you get attached to it, expecting that results will come, people will take this message seriously, or if you think that so many devotees should become advanced, any kind of results, if you link with that and expect results from that, then it will cause problems. It will cause problems. The only way you can do is that if a jiva realizes that everything is happening in this world by arrangement with the material nature, it's happening through the body, and use a life purely to wipe out the vasanas from inside, that jiva will escape from here. That jiva will escape from here. He will completely escape from here. That is what Krishna calls it as, while living within this body itself, he is already released. Tulya nindastu dirham mauni sandushto yena kena chil anigeda sthiramad bhaktimanme priyo nara. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, you will see this words. Krishna's explanation of that is that verse. If you look into the 12th chapter, 19th verse, I'm going to next chapter to tell you that how all the verses are connected to each other. It's a whole science. It's very difficult to go by verse and say that this is Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a total package. And if you want to, it has so much connections between verses in different chapters. There you will see the 19th verse, what Krishna is saying about a devotee. What does Krishna say? 19th verse in the 12th chapter. Tulya nindastu dirmauni sandushto yena kena chit anigeda sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraha. Tulya nindastu dirmauni sandushto yena kena chit anigeda sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraha. Prior to that, samau shatrau jamitreja tatha mana pamanayoho shidoshna sukadukesho sama sanga vivarjidaha. Tulya nindastu dirmauni sandushto yena kena chit anigeda sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyo naraha. Let's read the translation. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contamination, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge and engaged in devotional service, is very dear to me. Now, if you read the translation only, without knowing the whole psychological impact from what Krishna is saying, you will simply think, does that mean that I have to give up my residence straight away? And I'll leave home? And then if anybody says anything to you, Prabhu, I don't want to hear, because I'm equally minded, I say this to everyone. That is not what it means. This is the difficulty in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying here, if he has executed a karma in this way, he will re-come to this state. That is how it happens. That if he has executed karma in this way, that means without any ownership, fully knowing that material nature is doing all the karma through him, and his vasanas are getting driven out from inside, exhausted or wiped out from inside, a stage will come for that person, then this will be his situation. That is how you have to understand that verse. This cannot be cultivated. These verses cannot be cultivated. It's not for that purpose it was spoken. What do we do now? We study all, memorize all these verses, and then there is a test, we write all the answers, and we think we have understood. This is the problem. This is how, if you study Bhagavad Gita like that, you won't get anywhere. You will be same where you started at the end. You can't study Bhagavad Gita in that way. Bhagavad Gita is a science of the subtle body and the soul. How subtle body and the science soul is interconnected, how it works. So Krishna is saying there that if you develop this mood of karmam, while karmam is executed in this world, without creating any more fresh vasanas inside, that means you have learned the science of conducting the karma properly. Whatever vasana is already there and which is coming through this body, you can't do anything about it. That has to go through. That has to get it done through. But if that vasana is creating more vasanas inside for the future, then that means you have a problem there. Another body again in waiting. Isn't it? It's another body in waiting then. So Krishna's point is that if you cultivate this mood, that verse is what Krishna has spoken, Prarye Kriyamanani, all that, and it will come to a state that you are doing so many things in this world, but you are not you don't know anything what is going on. In that way, you are able to conduct the life in this world. You can see the difficulty, how difficult it is. What is normally happening is, I told you before also, spiritual life, Krishna, spiritual knowledge, everything is there. There is vyavaharam on the other side. What we are doing is, we are bringing Krishna and completely to dissolve in the vyavaharam. That's what normally we do, isn't it? We bring Krishna and the spiritual knowledge, everything, and bring it into our vyavaharam. Vyavaharam means transactions in this world, our dealings in this world. We bring Krishna and the knowledge, everything, and completely dissolve in the world. That is wrong. That is wrong. What we have to do, vyavaharam is vyavaharam. Krishna and spiritual life is different. You have to bring vyavaharam and dissolve in Krishna, not bring Krishna and dissolve in vyavaharam. Do you understand the difference? That normally our nature is that we go to the temple and we pray to Krishna that I have all these problems, help me, help me, help me. We say this. This is not very spiritual. This is what we are calling it, bringing Krishna and dissolving in the vyavaharam. That I have all the problems according to my prarabdham in my life. Different kinds of problems I have to go through. That is meant to happen and I will have to accept it. There is nothing you can do about it. But if I start bringing Krishna into it and dissolve Krishna in all my problems and thinking that depending on Krishna reacting to me, if he is protecting me, I be thankful to Krishna. If it's not, Krishna is not doing anything, then I become upset with Krishna. If I run my spiritual life on this principle, then it will end up in serious problems. So what Krishna is saying here is that do not mix vyavaharam with Krishna. Vyavaharam, let it go. Vyavaharam is for the body and the mind. It's not for the soul. If that principle is very clear and accepted, then we won't mix up these two things together. Vyavaharam is for the body. Body is meant to go one day. Mind is meant to go one day. You can't do anything about it. Whatever that has to happen, will happen. It is meant to happen, it will happen. If you are meant to suffer in this world, suffering will be there. There's nothing you can do about it. That has to be accepted. That because after all, it is for the body. It is happening, isn't it? You see, the sages had a very, very, very deeper analysis of all these things. That is why with full confidence they are telling us, look at your own life, it says to us. You have got these three states, isn't it? Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. Mm-hmm. In these three states, in Jagrat, the body is active. All problems you have in the Jagrat state, is it not? When you go to the dream state, you have little less problems. Why? Body is not functioning. Only the mind is functioning. Gross body is resting. Say for example, a young girl whose husband died suddenly and she has put her head on his body and she is crying. She is crying. After a while, she got so tired and she slept and she went into deep sleep. When she went into deep sleep, where is the body? Where is the husband? Where is the mind? Where is the misery? Where is the distress? Nothing there. So deliberately, Krishna has done this creation in such a way. These are all Acharya's words. It's not my words. That they are telling us that this Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, three states, Krishna has created to tell us, it's only in Sushupti state where you are completely freed from the misery. Completely freed from the misery. That is where you know very well that without the body, without the mind, without the intelligence, without the ego, you can be happy. And it's a law that applies to the whole universe. No matter where you go, when you are in the deep sleep state, when you don't have the body, you don't have the mind, you don't have the intelligence, you don't have the ego, you are experiencing the greatest happiness. Is it not? In the Sushupti state. So to prove to us that thinking that in this gross vacant state is a happier state, Krishna wants to wipe that out from us by showing to us that Sushupti state must be studied very well. And this principle that Sushupti is the state is the proper experience of the soul. That's when you are experiencing the happiness of the soul than the happiness of the senses or the mind. Why I am saying this is, Upanishads are the greatest treasures in the Vedic tradition, isn't it? Out of all the Upanishads, three major Upanishads is based on deep sleep state. Brihadaranyam, Chandokyam and Mandukyam. Three major, out of the 10 major Upanishads, there are 108 Upanishads. Out of the 10 major Upanishads on which there are commentaries from Acharyas, Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhu and all that, they comment on 10 major Upanishads. Out of that 10, three of them, Brihadaranyam, Mandukyam and Chandokyam, all three of them has only one topic to discuss, deep sleep. Imagine. Normally what do we say? Oh, sleep, deep sleep. It's not a good thing. It's ignorance, Prabhu. It may be ignorance, but the fact is there that it is in deep sleep that you are experiencing what you are actually. Therefore, deep sleep is a higher state than any other thing. As far as Upanishads are concerned, we ignore all that. We've been told that, oh, you shouldn't sleep too much and you shouldn't. No, deep sleep is not telling us that you should go and have a deep sleep. That's not what it's saying to us. What it's saying is trying to understand this principle that the body and the mind is your misery, to prove to us that the body and mind is not going to give you happiness. Happiness will only come from the soul, and that is proper happiness. These things, what you are experiencing through the body and the mind, is nothing but sense enjoyment, as it is addressed to. So here, coming back to this, this point, so tulinindastudir mauni, that word, sandushto yena kena chit, anigeda sthiramadir bhaktimanme priyonara. Did you see that word? If you read the translation, you can see. Krishna says, anigeda sthiramadir. His conscious, he is so detached from the world, even if he has a house to live or not, doesn't matter. That is his state of consciousness. That is, to such an extent, he has disconnected from the world, in other words. Therefore, Krishna says, Mauni, he is Mauni, he is a silent person. Mauni means not one who is silent actually, but inside there is not chittavritti inside. The mind is not wavering. Mind is not always wavering. Always there is a peace inside, steadiness inside. So that peace inside, which never gets broken, that if you give up your body in that state, there will be no distress. No distress will come from that. Because if you have reached that state while living within this body, you have already given up your body. That's what it means. You have already given up your body. After that, death is not a problem anymore. You see, when you study these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, you have to also look at what Krishna told Uddhava, isn't it? In the 11th canto, what Krishna is saying, exactly the same thing. But because Uddhava was in a different state than Arjuna, for Arjuna, karma vasana was still there. Uddhava had no karma vasana. Time is over for Uddhava. So he says to Uddhava in a different way. Nadriyet karma chodanam, he says. Isn't it? If you look into Bhagavadam, that's where you have to take both Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam same time and keep studying, because otherwise what will happen is, you may think that I have read Bhagavad Gita but I have not read Bhagavadam. No, if you keep on reading that way, you will not know. But the message is more important. Krishna is saying, he says to Uddhava, Nadriyet karma chodanam, jitnyasayam sampravarte nadriyet karma chodanam, he says. Even if from inside some vasana tells you to engage in karma, don't touch it, he says. Because you have reached that stage in life now that you don't have to be concerned about karma anymore. Karma, karma vasana, all those things has to go. If you look in the 10th chapter, in the 11th canto, there Krishna says here that indriyai indriyarteshu gunairapi guneshu cha grihyamaneshu aham kuryat na vidvan yasta vikriya. Devadhine sharirasmin gunabhavyena karmana vartamano abudastatra kartasmi iti nibadhyate. Krishna is stressing that point in few places. So there must be very strong impetus to say that. What is that? Vartamano abhuta satra kartasmiti nibhadyade. If you are thinking you are the doer, you are bound. So the only way to escape from this whirlpool of karma is how to free yourself not being the doer behind it. That means that is what that process Krishna has been talking about. Daivadhine sharirasmin gunabhavena karmana. Shariram, body, is Daivadhinam. Daivadhinam means it is in Krishna's hands. Krishna's hands means material nature's hands. Material nature has decided your body and he has sent you with this body here. Isn't it? They have sent us here with this body, what we have got. Daivadhine sharirasmin, Krishna says. According to gunabhavena karmana, according to the karma and the modes of nature, you've got a particular body. Now don't complain about it. That's the point Krishna is making. Don't complain about the body what we have got. This body will go one day. And when it goes, that's finished. That prarabdham is over. We have to see our own body in a particular way. Not to think that I'm this body and identify with the body. Daivadhine sharirasmin gunabhavena karmana vartamano abhudastatra karta asmi iti nibhadyate. Vartamano abhudastatra. Always conscious of this thing that in the it has only existence at the present. Vartamano abhudastatra. Only in the present it has existence. This body has existence. And we must be fully conscious of that all the time. That this body is only existing for the moment. Tomorrow what will happen, you don't know about this body. Similar, if you think, develop this thinking inside based on the Ekadasha Skandam and Bhagavad Gita, automatically our karma will also take that form in the same way. That means when you are executing karma also, we will not create more vasanas from that karma, nor we will take up the ownership from that karma. That's the way to free ourselves from that. Kartasmini nibhadyade. So, prakritistobi asamsakto yadhakam savidanila. Prakritistobi asamsakto. Even though he is within the prakriti, material nature, he is not in touch with the material nature. That is the way to live in this world. That is Krishna's point. Even if you are living in this world, you are not living in this world. That means you are not in touch with the prakriti. Now, when you read all these things in the Bhagavatam, you will say, oh, how is all this possible? Okay, that is the mind telling us. The sages are telling us, they have gone through this, they have experienced it, and they are telling us, if you want to give up this cycle of birth and death, not to come back to this material world again, and to go through this misery again in one after the other, there is only one way. That is what the sages are telling us, follow this route. That is the solution to the problem. There is no other shortcut to that. There is no other shortcut to that. That's why I'm saying, if we don't study Bhagavad Gita and Ekadasha Skandam thoroughly and digest it well, it is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. All these Prabhupada used to say, all this Haribol won't go very long, he said. You can keep on saying Haribol, but not last very long. He said, I gave you all these things, books to you, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, to study them well and understand it well. And the very subtleties of this Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. And once that gets in, it will have its effect. Otherwise, we will never accept it. So that is why it says here, you can see all those verses are important. There he said, Nastuvida, Nanindeda, Kurvada, Sadhu, Asaduva, Vadado, Guna Doshabhyam, Varjida, Samadrangmini. Nastuvida, Nanindeda, if somebody glorifies him or somebody offends him, insults him. Kurvada, Sadhu, Asaduva, and he does, somebody says you have done the right thing, somebody says you have done the wrong thing. Vadado, Guna Doshabhyam, and Varjida, Samadrangmini. A realized soul, Vadado Gunadoshabhyam, he is seeing that Gunam and Dosham he is not seeing anymore. This is good and this is bad. Remember, Krishna said in another instance, Gunam Dosham is all in the relative world. In the relative world, Gunam Dosham, we have decided this is good, this is bad. Ultimately, to know everything is bad is good, he said. To know everything is bad is a good thing. So, because that is this world has to offer. In the material world, no matter how you do perfectly things, ultimately it's all failure. No matter who does it, it's all failure here. Everything fails, body fails, mind fails, all intelligence fails. The wealth you have accumulated goes, the fame you have accumulated goes, followers, everything goes. So anything which is meant to get distracted at the end is a failure as well as Krishna is concerned. So that's why Krishna is saying here, Nastu vida nam indeda kurvada sadhu asadhuva vadado guna doshabhyam varjida samadrang muni. A muni or a realized soul, he avoids all these things. He doesn't want to get involved in all these things. In the sense that although activities are happening through him, it is not creating any mark inside. Any mark inside. That is why he mentioned there, Dehastobi na Dehastha. You see, Uddhava's questions, they are very intelligent. Uddhava is asking, soul has no bondage, isn't it? Soul is never bound. Soul is free, always free. And we are always experiencing bondage. We are always saying to Krishna, why you put me into this situation? I'm suffering. And another place, Bhagavad Gita is saying, birth, death, old age and disease. And we worry about all that. We are now worrying. Our age, we will be worrying about old age and death. Young people, they won't be worrying so much about old age and death. But they will be worrying about other things in this world. There's always something to worry about, isn't it? So, this worry about the old age, death and all that, Krishna says, you won't be able to escape from that by doing anything. By doing, you can't escape from that. Because the body by nature is meant to get destroyed. It has to get destroyed. Till now, no one has escaped death in this world. Isn't it? Everybody who had come had to go one way or the other. So the nature of the material body, that it will die. But what is Krishna saying here is, Dehastobi na Dehastha. A intelligent person, even though he is within the body, he is not in the body. That is the freedom what we have. That freedom Krishna has given us. Krishna has not given us the freedom to keep the body going well forever. Through bulwarkar or through hiccups or whatever we're doing, or through any messaging, body messages. Devotees are saying we have to just keep this body going, isn't it? For Krishna's service. So that, you see, that is not perfect understanding. It's not. You may, for example, I'll give you an example. Suppose from tomorrow onwards, I want to do a proper devotional service 24 hours, but tonight I died. So what's the use of my planning? Or I got very sick. Tonight I got a stroke or something. I can't do anything tomorrow. So all my plans for devotional service is over there. Is it not? So that is, from Shastra point of view, that is not the perfect understanding. Shastra point of view, perfect understanding is, body belongs to material nature. It will go its own way. I have no control over it. The only thing I can do, Dehastobi na Dehastha. I'm in that body. When the body goes, let it go. I'm not that body. This is a higher realization than to think that I have to have every 2 months a massage and all the best medicines in this world to keep my body going for Krishna service. That's a lower understanding. You cannot do anything about it. Even the best devotees, best jnanis, they also had to suffer in this world with their body. Is it not? At the time of leaving this world, Krishna didn't put it right for them. He says, your prarabdham has to go through. Everybody. Great, great spiritual leaders also have to go through this. They also don't have any freedom over it. They will get sick. And according to prarabdham, they will suffer in this world. And eventually they will... the body will die and go. But what is the difference then? Difference is, because they are spiritually advanced, they know Dehastobi na Dehastha. I'm not in that body. It's happening to the body, not to me. That is a big relief. And if that is fixed inside, it's the greatest relief we can have. That is what Krishna is saying. Dehastobi na Dehastha vidvan sopno yathotidaha. Adehastobi na Dehastha kumati sopna drkiyatha. We are in that category. The first category is saying, Dehastobina Dehastha Vidwan Sopnar Yadotida. A man who has come, a person who has come out of his body, his situation is like this. He's not in the body anymore. Just like when you wake up from your dream state and come to the wakened state, how you know that it was a dream that you were experiencing? Similarly, when you realize the self, what happens? You become freed from this body. And then you, exactly like the way a person has woken up from the dream state to the wakened state, you are waking up from the Jagrat state to your realized state. From Jagrat state to the realized state, you wake up, and at that time, whatever that's happening in the body will not affect you. Will not. Body will die. Body will get sick. Body will get old. Everything will happen, but you won't be affected. That is the first line. Dehasto vina dehasta vidvan sopnad yathotida. What's the next line? Adehasto vina dehasta kumadi sopna drakhyatha. Krishna is saying to Uddhava. Uddhava, adehasto vina dehasta. Another person, he has left the body by death. Death has happened. He has left the body. But because he has no realization, he is still in that body. Why? He'll be wanting to go back to that body again. He wants another body again to enjoy. He is in a desperate state, Krishna is saying. And Krishna calls it as Kumati. Kumati means he is in a dream already and he is living in that dream forever. Now, this statement Krishna has given in the Bhagavatam, and it's there in the Bhagavad Gita in a different way spoken there. You can't prove by any kind of experiments. It's your life. It's your existence in this world. It's your very existence in this world is what Krishna is talking about. That if you keep on identifying with the body, thinking that I will find a solution keeping this body, Krishna says, forget it. It is better to accept the truth, what Krishna says, rather than trying to counteract that. Thinking that Krishna will show some mercy to us and keep this body going forever. That will not happen. That is why in Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna did was, in the 7th chapter, he spoke very explicitly through Jnana Vijnana Yogam, Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti, to bring this point to us very carefully, to get it very strongly fixed inside. One is Aparaprakriti, other one is Paraprakriti. We belong to Paraprakriti. Material body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, all the material elements belongs to Aparaprakriti. Aparaprakriti is in Prakriti's hand, material nature. I am in Krishna's hands. If I identify with Krishna and work with Krishna, I can escape from the control of Prakriti. This is the 7th chapter's message. Same thing, when Krishna came back and spoke about to Arjuna, in the Jnana shall come in a different way, in the form of Kshetram and Kshetrajnan. It's a very interesting topic there, the Kshetram and Kshetrajnan. The same thing, again you will see in Upanishad spoken between two birds sitting on a tree. The same thing it is spoken. Two birds sitting on a tree. One tree, one bird wants to enjoy the fruits of the tree. You know that verse. Atmanam anyam jasa veda vidvan na pippalado na pippalada. That verse in the Bhagavatam. That one bird, two birds are sitting on a tree. Branch of a tree. And they're sitting there, and one bird has bitten one fruit and found it very tasty. The other bird is not doing anything. It's just watching the second bird. So, once he has bitten the first fruit, he found it very sweet. So, he jumped one branch to the lower one, the lower branch. He bit another one, again sweet, jumped one more branch down. So, more and more sweet fruits coming, he kept on biting them and he kept on jumping from the branch. Initially, they were together. Jivalpa and Paramatma were together once. But this Jiva consciousness and false ego has separated him from the Paramatma to such an extent that he kept on moving away. What does it mean? Our life in this world, sense gratification, isn't it? You can see, when we get more sense gratification in life, we forget Krishna easily. That's what it is. But if there is no sense gratification, if you are fixed in spiritual life, you will stay with Krishna. You won't get separated from Krishna anytime. So, that is the first thing. Now, while this journey carries on, jumping from one branch to another branch, suddenly you started biting a bitter one, a bitter fruit. When you have bitten a bitter fruit, you don't like it. So you started going back again, back to Krishna. This is again our life, isn't it? When we get a lot of misery and distress in life, then we go to Krishna. When we get a lot of sense gratification, everything fine, family life, social life, money, home, children, wealth, everything, bank balance, whatever it is, all that's going very well, far away from Krishna. No interest in Krishna at that time. Why? Then whatever we do in our sadhana and all has only a limitation, its own limitations. It doesn't go very close by. So that is what happens there. You can see in Bhagavatam the same story brought about in a different way in the Puranjana story. If you remember that, you have to read Bhagavatam all the time. Then only these stories must remain. And if you look at the background of the Upanishads, you will see how Upanishads messages come there. Puranjana story, what happened was, that the king Prachina Barahis, this story was told by Sri Narada Maharshi. I'll very briefly mention that. Sri Narada Maharshi told this story to King Prachina Barahis about a story of a king, Puranjana, who had to accept a body in this world. And then all what has happened to him with his wife, children, grandchildren, and eventually he had to die and leave this world. There's five chapters, Puranjana Vakyanam, in the fourth canto, the last five chapters. If you read that, you will get the interesting part of it. So ultimately, it's a very funny story. And it's an allegorical story. It's a very allegorical story. You know that it is an allegorical story. And in that story, Prachina Maharshi sat and listened to all the story, what Narada Maharshi spoke. And ultimately, Prachina Maharshi says to him, "I did not understand the story," he said. Because the story is a very funny story, it is. The Puranjana story. But what is the message? That's more important. There, Sri Narada Maharshi says there, that this jiva had to accept this body, got married, and then got attached to got attached to women, and there was a lot of sense enjoyment among them, and eventually has to take birth as the king Malayadvaja and marries this Vidarbha, King Vidarbha's daughter, and they get married and the children were born. And eventually the story ends in a very funny way. He says her husband died and she goes to the forest, and then suddenly the husband's body was in the funeral pyre. And while Bendy was mourning, somebody came there and told him, "Are we not friends?" And both of them flew back to the spiritual world. This is how the story ends. Now, when you read that story, you may think that what kind of story is this? Prachina Varahis is not wrong in saying that doesn't make any sense. The message is this, that till Jivatma, the Jiva, comes into contact with Krishna, or self-realization happens within, he will be busy in this world with various things. Once you get to know, self-realization happens, who he is, because the words of the Brahmana is more important at the last minute. He says to him, "Don't you know me?" Paramatma is talking to the Jivatma there. "Don't you know me, who I am? Don't you know who you are?" He is asking there. In other words, we have all forgotten our real identity, what we are. This is our problem today. We have forgotten what we are. We have, and not only that, we have accepted another identity, what we are not. That is this body. That is why in the Shastra, when they teach agrahanam, anyada grahanam, two things. Jnanamargam is like that. Agrahanam means we don't know what we are. I don't know who I am. Anyada grahanam, instead I have understood that I am somebody else. So we have two problems there. First of all, anidagrahanam. Anidagrahanam means I am identifying with the body. It has to go from me. Then agrahanam, that I am spirit soul, that has to come back, that knowledge. So both things has to happen to us before self-realization happens. Krishna gives whole of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, everything was spoken to realize the self, who we are. And once the self is understood, then that is a solution to the problem also. There is no other solution. So here we were talking about so Krishna is saying here in the Bhagavatam, if you take, after talking Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit, "Please take away that ignorance in you that there is a thing called death." Do you know that? That's how Bhagavatam finishes. He says to Parikshit, "My dear Parikshit, please give up this ignorance in you that there's a thing called death. There is a thing called death." Because there is no thing called death for you. It is for the body. How does it say in the Bhagavatam? It says here, "Tum tu rajan marishyedi pasha buddhimimam jahim." You see, in the 12th canto, that 6th chapter, I'm sorry, the 5th chapter is an important chapter. It's only 13 verses in there, very small chapter. But it is these 13 verses directly telling Parikshit, now move away from this ignorance. Up to this 12th canto, this chapter, so many things were spoken, isn't it? Starting from creation, sargam, visargam, sthanam, boshanam, udim, anandaram, ishanivadha, nirodham, mukti, everything was spoken. But when you came to this fifth chapter in the 12th canto, Krishna is saying there to Parikshit, because he could see Tatshaka was on his way. Very soon, Tatshaka will bite Parikshit. So there wasn't much time left. So what Sukadeva Goswami did was at that point, straight away went to the message what he has to say. He told Parikshit, Parikshit, tum tu rajan marishedi. There is no such thing called death, my dear king. He never said that before. Pashabuddhi mimam jahi. It is Pashabuddhi. Animals think that I am going to die. If a human being thinks he is going to die, he is an animal. He said, animal. That's the message. Tundurajan marishedi. Pashabuddhi mimam jahi. And he says here, na jataha pragabodhodya dehavatvam na nangshyasi. Very important words. He says here, tum tu rajan marishyedi. You are thinking like an animal, he says. Pashubuddhi. Pashubuddhi means animal's mood, animal's intelligence. Animal thinks, oh, I'm going to die, he's going to kill me. But if you start thinking like that, you are no better than an animal. You are also an animal. So don't think like that. Pashubuddhi mimam jahi. Give up that animal intelligence. And then, na jadaha. You are not even born. You know, I was saying to you before, na jadaha, you are not even taken birth. Unfortunately, in our identification with the body, we are thinking, I've taken birth on a such and such a date. I'm going to die in such a date, such obituary and all they say, isn't it? Born, 1850, dead, 1950 or something like that. They show all these things. What is born and what is dead? The body, not the person. Person has not taken birth, person is not dead either. This clarity and this subtlety has to develop inside us. And that is what Sukadeva Goswami is expecting from us by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Not all the stories. This is the message at the end to Parikshit. And telling Parikshit, be like this, then Tatshaka cannot touch you. He's seeing Tatshaka coming and saying that Tatshaka cannot touch you because you are not a... Only then Bhagavad Gita will make sense. Na jayate, na mriyate. Krishna says there, isn't it? You don't die, you don't take birth. Krishna says to Arjuna, na jayate, mriyate, va kadajal, nayam bhutva bhavido anabhuya, ajo nityam shashodoyam puranaha, na hanyade, hanyamane, sharire. So, separating that body from the soul and getting identification with the soul is the most important thing, and that is self-realization. That is self-realization. To get that fixed up there, Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken Srimad Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami has spoken Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is what they are expecting from us, to study Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. This is what should happen to us. Tum tu rajan marishyedi, pashabuddhi mimam jahi, na jadaha. You are not born. Because who is born? Body was born. And this body, as I said before, nobody understands this body. What is the nature of this body? All of us have got different kinds of body. Different times we were born. Different times we will die. Different diseases we get. How can we say we understand this body? Can anyone say that I understand the body completely? Nobody understands this body. And this is the sage's conclusion. Medicine may say something. That we leave it to them. Let them sort that out themselves. That's not our problem. Our problem is what Krishna is saying here. Tum tu rajan marishyedi pashabuddhi mimam jahi na jadaha pragabodhedyo. He says here. Isn't it? Pragabodhedyo dehavantvam na nangshyasi. Deham, shariram, material body, die. You don't die. This is the way to escape from the cycle of birth and death. If this gets established properly inside, identification with the soul is complete while living in this body, then there is no death after that. Death is over. Where is death then? That is the point Krishna is making here in these verses. So, after saying that, he says to the king, if you say that death is for the body, body is dead long ago. Is it not? Think about it. You see, when the soul is not inside, the body is dead. So, if death is for the body, body is dead long ago. That is the logic behind it. Sages have a different way of looking at things. They don't look at it the way we look at things. They are saying to us that shariram, material body, that if it has happened to them, the material body, the death, it is already dead. It cannot live on its own. It cannot live on its own. But if it is for the soul, the death is for the soul, how can you die? Very deep thing it is. You have to think a lot about it. I'll tell you why. Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, there is one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, I mentioned this before also, that the whole, if you have understood that verse, you have understood Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes we say, this verse is important in the Bhagavad Gita. This verse is important in the Bhagavad Gita. Everybody will say so many different things. Depending on from which angle you are looking at Bhagavad Gita, different verses are important. For example, if you ask Srila Prabhupada which verse is important in Bhagavad Gita, do you know what answer Prabhupada has given? Prabhupada said 2-3 verses, very important he said. Manmanabha madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Isn't it? This is the verse Prabhupada will always stress on. Pay your obeisances to Krishna, become my devotee. These verses Krishna gave a lot of importance. Sometimes Prabhupada gave importance to the Sarvadharman Paritya, Mahamegam Sharnam Raja, Aham Tvam Sarva Bebhyo, Mokshishyami Vashuja. All these verses are important from the point of view of bhakti. They are important from the point of view of bhakti. But if you say that you want to understand what Krishna is saying, in what is the message in the Bhagavad Gita, they are not the verses. Na sado vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada, ubhayorabe drishtvandam stanayor tattvadarshibi. Very, very important verse. Very important verse. If you have understood that verse, then you have understood Bhagavad Gita. If you have understood, if you have digested it, I mean, you know, understanding means not with the mind and intelligence, but the concept behind it. What is the concept? Let's look at that verse. Nasato vidyade bhava. If you look at the second chapter, you will see Krishna begins this chapter. And this verse has been commented by the acharyas for pages after pages. This one verse. For this reason. Why? If you have got that verse properly, then it answers that question. Body, if it is, death is for the body, it's already dead. Body has no meaning anymore. Isn't it? What is the number? 16, is it? 16, isn't it? Yeah. So, this verse is telling us, Na asato vidyade bhavo. What does it mean? Na asato, asatam. There, again now. Krishna divides that into sata and asata. Like pragati, paraprakriti and aparaprakriti. The same way. Krishna is saying here, Na asato vidyade bhavo. Asata. Asata means that is something that is temporary. It has no bhava. It cannot exist. What is temporary? It has no reality, in other words. That's all asata. Everything is asata in this world. Wife, children, wealth, home. Anything you take in material world is all asat only. Yeah? Na asato vidyade bhavo. So asat cannot have bhava. First thing he says to Arjuna, Arjuna, accept this first. Na asato vidyade bhavo. That means anything that is in the which is asat, Krishna has put everything into this asat category except the soul. Except the soul. Everything else is in the asat category. Mind, intelligence, ego, senses, body, and this creation. This is all asat. Practically everything is asat. What we see is all asat. Krishna is saying, Na asato vidyade bhavaha. That means what is asat, it cannot have any reality, bhava, existence. It cannot have it. Then in the next line he says, Na abhava, na bhavo vidyade sadaha. Satya cannot have abhava. Na abhavo vidyadeva. Satya means which is permanent, eternal, always existing, cannot be destroyed. If this principle is understood, ubhayo arabhidrishtvandam, this is the principle on which whole Bhagavad Gita has been spoken. Ajarya Swamiji's commentary on that is very exhaustive. He says, if this verse is the most principle, very underlying principle of the Bhagavad Gita's point, because with that verse you can understand the 7th chapter, 13th chapter and many other things in the Bhagavad Gita, is crystal clear that Satya cannot have abhavam and Asatya cannot have bhavam. If you say in the words of the Bhagavad Gita, the words of the Bhagavad Gita, which means, let's read the translation, those who are seers of the truth have concluded that of the non-existent there is no endurance. That is, asato vidyate bhava. Non-existent, there is no endurance. And of the existent, there is no cessation. Of the existent, there is no cessation. These seers have concluded by studying the nature of both. So, na asato vidyate bhavaha, na bhavo, na asato vidyate bhavaha, na abhavo vidyate sataha. This is the words. So, having said that, if you keep that in the background, and if you analyze this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, what we are now discussing, that body is asat, and it will never stay. And if you say death is for the body, body is already dead because it is asat. Na abhavo vidyate sada, and soul is concerned, you cannot destroy it. It will always exist. That is the nature of the soul, isn't it? Krishna spoke about that in the Bhagavad Gita. Very nature of that is why that second chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, we must study very well and digest each verse very well, so that all that will support our understanding of the remaining chapters also. So, Krishna says here that the Nasado vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sada, ubhayorabe drishtvandam, stanayor satya darshibi. So, and says that, then says, so, these two things, satya and asatya, they cannot change their position. Yeah? Sat cannot become asatya, and asat cannot become satya. That's very important. Why I'm saying that is, body cannot remain eternally because it is asatya. Soul can never be destroyed. It will remain forever. And we are that. If digesting all these things is important for us, we have to accept this. We have no, otherwise you can't move further in Bhagavad Gita. Na asado vidyate bhavaha, na abhavo vidyate sataha. That is what Krishna is saying there. So on that same principle, Krishna is saying here, it is always existing. What? Sat is always existing. And what does not exist will never exist. It is always gone. And what exists always exists. And you cannot interchange each other. When it is like that, there is no thing called death. Yeah? That makes sense, isn't it? If it is like that, if this principle, na asado vidyate bhava, na abhavo vidyate sada, Krishna is asking, where is this thing called death then? If it is body, it's already dead because it is asat anyway. If it is soul, it cannot get destroyed. It will always remain. So why are we worried about death? This is Krishna's question. Krishna doesn't give any value to the death. It's concerned because there is no meaning as far as Krishna is concerned or the great acharyas are concerned. That is why they boldly went and propagated this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita wherever they could, without any, whomever wanted to accept it, whoever could understand it, they understood it and they made their life. That is what the sages are telling us. Take advantage of this, because that is why ubhayoravi drishtvandam stvanayor tattvadarshibi. The tattvadarshi is the sage they are referring to. They are referring to the sage, tattvadarshibi. They have seen the truth. And only one who has seen the truth can tell us about the truth. Not anyone who hasn't seen the truth. How will they talk about the truth? Only those who have seen the truth. Krishna is saying, it is their conclusion that na asado vidyate bhavaha, na abhavo vidyate sataha. That's all. Simple thing. And if we accept and take it on board, then you can see there is no meaning to the word called death. isn't it? That is why when talking to Uddhava, Krishna says to Uddhava, this death is concerned. People make a big thing out of it. He says to Uddhava, Uddhava, death is not such a big thing. Mrityu means death, atyanda vismruti. He says all what's happening to you at the time of death is you have forgotten this body and you have started remembering another body. That's all. Nothing has happened to you. All what has happened is you started forgetting this body what you are now in. You have forgotten that body and you have started remembering about another body. That's all. So if you are able to stop remembering another body, then you are out of this thing called transmigration of the soul. It's over there. This is the principle on which Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam has got to tell us. And these things are important. Whether you are a jnani, yogi, karmi or karma yogi or bhakta, whatever it is, these principles won't change. It remains the same for everyone. It remains the same for everyone. So Krishna's point is mrityu atyanda vismriti. Mrityu, death is nothing but a forgetfulness, Krishna says. You forget that this body has gone. And he is thinking, suddenly our identification with this body has changed and went into identification with another body. But me, the person inside, has neither taken birth nor died. What is taken birth is the body. What is dead is also body, not me. So that is where the separation from the body, while living within the body, is important. And that is self-realization. So it's 5 o'clock. We'll stop there. We'll continue tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai. Jai.